him, are you hopeful of a peace deal being reached? The cost of Fat Jab Manjaro is set to almost triple thanks to a global drugs price war. If you use the jab, will this stop you from taking it? Plus,
Penn has today surrendered. The last of our enemies is laid low.
80 years after victory in Japan, we'll have a full appreciation throughout the show. All that and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on Global Player, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are preparing to meet in Alaska for their first face-to-face talks in 6 years. They will discuss the prospect of peace in Ukraine at the much-anticipated summit this evening. LBC's US correspondent Simon Marks reports.
Vladimir Putin, setting foot on American soil for the first time in a decade, will meet Donald Trump one-on-one, accompanied only by interpreters. Then the meetings will be widened to include the two leaders' advisors.
I think it's going to be a good meeting, but the more important meeting will be the second meeting that we're having. We're going to have a meeting with President Putin, President Zelensky, myself. And maybe we'll bring some of the European leaders along, maybe not.
But that second meeting will be entirely conditional on how the conversation with Putin plays out. And some seasoned Russia hands fear the Kremlin leader is justifiably confident that he can lure President Trump into talking about economic partnership with Russia instead of improved relations between Russia and Ukraine.
Stay with LBC and the LBC app for full coverage of the Alaska summit. The Prime Minister says Ukraine is fighting for the same values as the Allies in the Second World War. Events are taking place to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, including a national two-minute silence at midday. More than 71,000 soldiers from Britain and the Commonwealth died fighting in the war against Japan. A 16-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of murdering a 13-year-old girl in West Yorkshire. Police are treating the girl's death in Huddersfield as unexplained. LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown has more details.
Police had been called to Sheepbridge Road in Huddersfield on Monday evening just after 11:30. The girl was found unresponsive and taken to hospital, where she later died. The teenage boy has also been arrested on suspicion of the rape of a 16-year-old girl in a separate incident and remains in custody.
The High Court is expected to hear a council's attempt to close an asylum hotel in Essex. Epping District Council, which has applied for an injunction, says the area has seen unprecedented levels of protest and disruption. TikTok influencers are to highlight the risks of medical tourism as part of a government campaign. Ministers say it'll help people make informed choices before undergoing procedures like hair transplants or so-called turkey teeth. The NHS is facing a growing bill from fixing botched surgery. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 91.77 after closing up 12 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 16. LBC weather dry and sunny in the south, cloudier further north with some showers in the north of Scotland. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £201 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody is watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Subject to currency fluctuations, the jackpot is capped at €250 million. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale.
And a very good morning to you. It's 3 minutes past seven on LBC. I'm Ian Dale, in for Nick Ferrari for one day only. Some of you may be relieved to hear. The reason I'm here is because, as many of you know, but maybe not all of you do, Nick got married last weekend to the lovely Claire, and they've decided to have a few days honeymoon. And why not? I know everyone wishes them well. Right, the big news story of the day, I guess you all know what that is. It is the Trump-Putin summit in Alaska, which will take place from 8:30 p.m. this evening. Now, I don't know how much stall you're setting by this summit. I don't have high hopes for it at all, because I don't believe that Vladimir Putin wants a peace deal at all. I think he thinks he's making progress in this war, and he wants to end it his way rather than Donald Trump's way. So I think it's outrageous in a way that he and Putin are meeting without Zelensky being there. How can you have a peace deal imposed on you? And Vladimir Zelensky, unless I've got him very, very wrong, is not somebody who's going to have a peace deal imposed on him. I'm not very hopeful of anything particularly positive coming out of this summit today. But you may disagree. You may think, no, this is a real chance for peace and both sides are going to grab it. Let me know over the course of the next hour, 0345 6060 973. Well, let's hear a little bit from Donald Trump. Speaking for the Oval Office last night ahead of this meeting with Putin in Alaska today, President Trump told reporters that the Russian president is not going to mess around with him.
We have a meeting with President Putin tomorrow. I think it's going to be a good meeting, but the more important meeting will be the second meeting that we're having. We're going to have a meeting with President Putin, President Zelensky, myself, and maybe we'll bring some of the European leaders along, maybe not. I think President Putin will make peace. I think President Zelensky will make peace. We'll see if they can get along.
And speaking to government ministers from Moscow yesterday, Putin said he welcomed the U.S. president's efforts to bring about peace in the region.
I want to tell you about the stage we're at with the current American administration, which, as everyone knows, is making, in my opinion, quite energetic and sincere efforts to stop the hostilities, stop the crisis, and reach agreements that are of interest to all parties involved in this conflict.
Well, let's speak to Matt Fry, LBC presenter, Saturday 10 a.m. to midday, and Channel 4 News presenter. He is live in Alaska. Matt, very good morning to you. Are you hopeful for anything coming out of this summit today?
Very easy to be cynical, and I think you summed it up brilliantly, Ian, about the various constraints for any kind of realistic hopes of a ceasefire at these talks. However, you heard in those clips, you know, some kind of hint of what people are, you know, what the two principal parties want in this. I think for Trump, it's very much the idea that he's living up to his campaign promise of, you know, making peace at some stage, you know, obviously not in the first 24 hours of taking office, but maybe in the, you know, first, you know, 24 months. So that in itself would be an achievement. And for Putin, it's the, you know, his ability to flatter Trump into thinking that he's making history. And, you know, the space in which you might find a compromise, in which you might find some kind of ceasefire, some settlement for Ukraine, will be found somewhere in the middle. You know, and it's possible that none of this will happen. Maybe Trump will, you know, storm out tomorrow afternoon, and or, you know, I don't think Putin would storm out, but he might basically give up very little, and the whole thing ends in failure. But I think, given the fact that for the last 3.5 years, really very little has moved, and the front line in Ukraine has been frozen solid, almost like a front line in the First World War, and there was very little political movement, the fact that all this is being disrupted now, even for reasons of, you know, Trump's vanity and trying to get hold of the Nobel Peace Prize, I think has to be embraced, as long as the compromises that he comes up with and that are signed on to are not things that throw the Ukrainians under the bus. And I think the last 2 days, with the Ukrainians and the Europeans prevailing upon Trump to stick to some, you know, red lines and principles, well, let's see, that may have worked.
What does success look like? Because I don't know the whereabouts of President Zelensky at the moment, but it seems to me as though that there are efforts to say, well, if this does work, we're going to bring Zelensky in and extend this summit a bit, and maybe European leaders as well. Trump was very equivocal on whether European leaders would be involved in the next stage of this, wasn't he, yesterday?
He was indeed, but I think he realizes that at some stage you can't have a summit about Ukraine without Ukraine sitting at the table. And of course, he did say that, you know, there might be a second summit that will follow soon on from the first summit. I have not heard that President Zelensky is, you know, hiding somewhere, you know, in the mountains of Alaska, waiting to kind of pounce onto the airbase in order to be involved in these discussions. And I don't think that's something that, you know, is being realistically entertained by any sides in these talks. But it is just possible that they lay a basic framework and that Trump, you know, realizes when Putin is trying to lay a trap for him and doesn't fall into it. I mean, this is all very theoretical. And, you know, what worries me, Ian, is that, you know, if you look at, you know, past summits between Trump and Putin, you know, Trump has this desire to spend time on his own with Putin. And there's this sort of strange thing about American presidents when they think that they understand what the Russian leader is all about. George W. Bush, you know, famously once said, and you know, told me himself in an interview, "Don't worry about Vladimir, Matt. I know how this guy works. I know what makes him tick." And Trump has more or less said the same thing, except they don't really know, because Putin is extremely, you know, qualified and details driven and obsessed with the issue of Ukraine. He's thought about little else in the last, you know, 10 years, to be, or 15 years, to be honest. And Trump comes along as a bit of an amateur who hasn't got the same grasp of details, and he thinks he can rely on his gut instincts. As you said just yesterday, you know, I'll know in the first 2, 3, or 4 minutes whether this summit, you know, will fail or succeed. And if you're not in the room as a Russia expert, and if you care about the future of Ukraine and Europe, that, of course, makes you blanche. And the question that European leaders have on their mind, and Zelensky, is whether Trump will actually remember any of the talking points that were hammered into him in the last 3 days. And again, I have to say, let's wait and see, because we just don't know how this will pan out. They'll be meeting by themselves with their translators for the first 2 hours or so. And that in itself is quite worrying for many people.
Matt, thank you very much indeed for talking to us this morning. That's Matt Fry, LBC presenter, Saturdays 10 a.m. to midday. And of course, he'll be presenting a Channel 4 News special tonight from 7. Alexei Goncharenko joins me now live from Ukraine, Ukrainian MP and president of the PACE Committee on Migration, Refugees and Displaced Persons, and good friend of the programme. Alexei, very good morning to you. When you woke up this morning, were you feeling optimistic about this summit, or were you looking at it with a certain degree of dread?
Good morning, Ian, and I have a very mixed feelings. Both fear, concerns, but a lot of hope too. We are very exhausted here in Ukraine. We want this war to end as soon as possible, and it looks to us that now we are at the closest moment during these 3.5 years. So a lot of hopes are present too.
What do you think the likelihood is of success, and how would you define success at this summit?
The success will be if at the end of the summit there will be an agreement about unconditional ceasefire, which was pushed by President Trump from the beginning, which Ukraine agreed on in March, and Russia does not agree for this. So if it will change and we will have unconditional ceasefire, that would be a big success, and President Trump will deserve all possible credits. If probably the second option, if there will be a decision about a trilateral summit and meeting, including Zelensky, in the nearest days or weeks, for example, some partial ceasefire now, that will be also a success. If in the end there will be just talking and no direct results, that will mean that Trump lost and Putin won.
How likely is a ceasefire? Because, as I understand it, this week there have been new Russian moves in Ukraine, particularly, I think, in the Donbass, and also I think there's been some bombing of Kyiv. Now, if Putin was serious about a ceasefire, would he really have been doing that this week?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely in the hands of Putin. Immediately he will give an order to stop the war, it will be stopped. So he will attack till the last moment, but then if he will be pushed enough by Trump to stop the war, it will stop. So you shouldn't look at what's going on now in Ukraine. You should look at what will happen during this meeting. Trump has all leverages to make Putin to accept peace. Putin doesn't want peace, but Trump has all leverages to do this. So we will see today who is stronger and who is, sorry to say this, but alpha here.
I mean, the leverage that Trump has got, of course, is to make sure that Ukraine is armed to the hilt and that America could provide lots more weapons. That is the main bargaining point he's got with Putin, isn't it? But do you think he's prepared to deploy that argument?
I think the main argument is probably in the hands of Trump, speaking about Trump, exactly about him, is sanctions, tariffs, and all these things. And I think because of his pressure on India and other things that she did recently, he will have this chance. So is he ready to impose really very serious sanctions against Russia and against countries which are buying Russian oil? I hope he is. If he is not, I think Putin will try him.
And just finally, do you think that Donald Trump has been on a bit of a journey since that awful encounter with President Zelensky in the Oval Office in, what was it, February? He seems to be talking a very different language regarding Ukraine now.
Yes, definitely. And I think a lot was done by our allies, including our British allies and European friends, who worked a lot with President Trump to explain him what's going on. But also, I think it was a Putin the victory, so to say, because Putin showed to Trump that he doesn't want peace, that he tries to play a game with Trump. And today is the day when everything will be decided.
Alexei, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. That's Alexei Goncharenko, Ukrainian MP. Now, in a moment, in fact, throughout the programme, we're going to be talking about VJ Day. It's the 80th anniversary today. We'll have your calls coming up on Ukraine too. What are your hopes or fears for this summit tonight in Alaska? But at 7:15, it's time for the news with Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are preparing for their first meeting in 6 years. The King and Queen are to honour Second World War veterans on the 80th anniversary of VJ Day. A legal attempt to stop a hotel in Essex being used to house asylum seekers is expected to be heard later. LBC weather, dry and sunny in the south, cloudier in the north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb in Tottenham. There's still only one lane open on the A10 High Road going southbound at Monument Way. It's all down to an accident. One lane's closed on the M4 eastbound just before junction 89 at Maidenhead, and that's where a car has broken down. Also on the motorways, the M4's very busy eastbound onto the elevated section, and the M1 slow southbound to junction 11 at Dunstable South. On the train, South Western Railway services are currently at a standstill between Chessington South and Motspur Park, and that's because of a shortage of staff. London Overground's Lioness Line suspended between Euston and Kilburn High Road. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo Line.
This is LBC.
The Toyota CHR. Striking design. Trusted hybrid technology. Choose self-charging or plug-in hybrid. With Toyota know-how, reliability is built in. Now available at 0% APR representative over 24 months. And right now, enjoy an extra £1,500 off. Ready to go with confidence? Visit your nearest Toyota centre. Available on PCP when financed through Toyota Financial Services by September 30th. Optional final payment. Indemnities may be required. See website. Conditions apply.
LBC.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on. Oh,
thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Huh. Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crisp in with Walker's. Delicious.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. This is LBC.
19 minutes past seven. It's Ian Dale in for Nick Ferrari. Let's run through some of the front pages on lbc.co.uk. Ukraine calls akin to Second World War allies, Starmer says, ahead of the Trump-Putin-Alaska meeting. On The Sun, they've got their finger on the pulse of the people. Hitting back, Peter Andre lashes out at ex-wife Katie Price's lies in furious social media post after staying silent for 16 years. You'd say it's a light news day when things like that happen, but it isn't a light news day. I remember interviewing Katie Price once for an hour and thinking, what an intelligent woman. That surprised you, didn't it? On the Huffington Post, Bondi turns the screws. DC AG resists cops getting cosy. No idea what that's all about. The Daily Mail, the truth about JD Vance's new BFF Thomas Skinner, modern day Del Boy's roots. Bish, bash, bosh. The Mirror. This ends to another Peter. You see, why are these newspapers? Do people really buy newspapers because Peter Andre is on the front page? Dear, oh dear. The Independent, the hug that tells Trump we've got Zelensky's back. Well, I hope Donald Trump certainly has. Well, as many of you know, today is the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, which brought the war, Second World War, to an end. Obviously, VE Day was the 8th of May, VJ Day, 15th of August. And King Charles has said the heroes will never be forgotten, which I think is quite a poignant comment, because, of course, the Japan War was known as the Forgotten War for all sorts of different reasons. And I think it is so important that we mark it today. We're going to be taking your calls on VJ Day. Look, given that we're now in 2025 and it's 80 years on, I completely understand there won't be many people who will have been around on VJ Day. But if you were, we'd love to hear from you and get your memories. But also, you will have had relatives that fought in the Far East against Japan, and some of them will have told you what it was like. Many of them, because it was so awful, won't have talked about it at all, which I think is an interesting fact in itself. So we'd love to hear from you on VJ Day. Leveson Wood is a British Army officer and explorer whose grandfather fought in the Far East campaign, and today he'll be at the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire for the VJ Day commemorations. Leveson, very good good morning. I knew I would do it. I knew I would do it. We're only 21 minutes into the show and I say good evening. Good morning. What does this day mean to you?
Good morning. Well, it's a very important day for me. My grandfather served and fought in Burma in 1943, all the way through to the end of the war. And in fact, he was stationed in Japan after the atomic bomb was dropped as part of the Allied occupation force. It's a very poignant day. I remember as a kid, my granddad told me all of these stories about his time and the horrific ordeals that he went through. But also, you know, as a young lad from Stoke-on-Trent, it was his first time out of Stoke, frankly, and to be serving in the Far East must have been quite the experience. And so it was one of the biggest inspirations for my formative years and kind of inspired me to want to see more of the world. So I'm going to the Arboretum today to pay tribute to him and all of the other young lads that made that sacrifice all those years ago.
Why did it become known as the Forgotten War?
Well, I think, as you pointed out just now, it was kind of overshadowed by VE Day. And, you know, after the defeat of the Nazi regime, I think everyone just wanted to sort of get on with their lives and forget about the war. But, of course, it played an important part in bringing the global conflict to an end. And that the war did drag on for many, many months after VE Day. And so it's important that we recognise that.
People, obviously, I suppose because the European war was closer, it was easier to get information about what was going on in the war. That was part of the reason that maybe people didn't know as much about what went on in the Far East. But a lot of the veterans just didn't want to talk about it when they came home, which I suppose is understandable in some ways. But even when their children, their grandchildren tried to eke things out of them, they still wouldn't talk about it, even though it might have been 30 or 40 years on. Why do you think that was?
No, that's right. You know, my grandfather didn't tell his son, my father, anything at all about his experiences in the war. I don't know why, but he did tell me some of the gory details, and they really did stick with me. But perhaps it was something he needed to get on his chest later on in life. But it was a brutal campaign. It was incredibly tough being out in those conditions in the jungle and the mountains of Southeast Asia against a very formidable enemy. And some of the stories, things like punji sticks and booby traps and snipers strapped to the trees were really horrific things to go through. Very, very difficult, I would imagine, for him to go through. I'm a soldier myself. I served in Afghanistan, very different set of circumstances. But, there are certain things you just want to forget.
They say we should learn from history, because if we don't, it will repeat itself. What can we learn from the campaign in the Far East that can relate to modern-day situations?
Well, thankfully, Japan was very quick to turn a corner after the war. I think the horrors of the atomic bombs being dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki meant that, the situation did have to change. And Japan is now a staunch ally. In fact, I served in Japan myself, helping to train with the Japanese as part of the first time the British troops had done that since the end of the Second World War. History... can be learned from. We can learn those lessons, and we can make new friends, thankfully. And so I think the important thing is reconciliation, but also not forgetting where things can go wrong. And as we see in the global climate today, we do seem to have sadly forgotten a number of the lessons learnt in the war. And hopefully we can take a deeper appreciation and respect for history.
I remember the first time I went to Germany in 1977, when the Second World War still hung over Britain in quite a big way. A lot of the television programmes and films, documentaries, were all about the war. And I was very nervous about talking to Germans about the Second World War. Did you feel that when you were with Japanese soldiers, or was it something that they were quite happy to talk to you about?
Well, they were more interested, to be honest, in getting on with things. And actually, nobody really wanted to talk about the war, because I think there's a lot of water under the bridge, and there has been huge efforts towards reconciliation. I was recently in northeastern India and Kohima on the Burmese frontier, making a film called The Last Burma Star, and that again was to pay tribute to the campaign. And standing there in the war cemetery that, run by the Commonwealth War Graves Commission, was really poignant, because it's got all of the Allied soldiers that fought alongside us in this campaign. It wasn't just a British campaign. There were troops from all over the empire, lots of people from, the Middle East, West Africa, the Gurkhas. So it was very much a global campaign, and there were lots of Japanese there too, which was really important to see the sacrifices made on both sides.
Leveson, thank you very much indeed. The Last Burma Star, your documentary, is due to premiere on Sky in November. Vijay says, it's not just Vijay Day that we must quite rightly celebrate today, but we must also acknowledge and celebrate Indian Independence Day, which is also today. Not the 80th, though, is it? Because, I mean, a zero or a five, that I think that's when you mark an anniversary. But, yes, you're absolutely right. That was today as well. Right, let's go to your calls on what might happen later on today in Alaska. Peter's in Wimbledon. Hello, Peter.
Hi, good morning, Ian.
Morning.
I think we're kind of putting ourselves with having high hopes about this meeting. Out of this meeting, what's going to come out is Putin and Trump's going to discuss what's going to benefit Trump personally and his businesses. His chief negotiator, who is Steve Witko, who went down to Moscow, he has got a close business ties with one of the Russian oligarchs, Mr. Blavatnik. And the thing is that what has been played out in front of us is a play which will make look like Zelensky is a scapegoat, doesn't want to have peace. So Trump is, whatever it is, whether it is the copy of Epstein files, on him, whether the fact that Tom Paine's businesses in the 90s were bailed out by the Russian. There's a lot of things down there that's going on we don't know about exactly what Putin has on him. But Donald Trump is not going to be acting in interest of Ukraine or Europe. The only thing he cares, his business is going to benefit from relationship with Russia. And Russia can offer Trump anything he wants, to be honest with you, because for Putin, Ukraine is so important that he will give up everything. Yeah, he doesn't care about Syria, Iran, or anything else. For Putin, the ultimate goal is destruction of Ukraine as a state, because while Ukraine existed as an independent state, he cannot claim a greater Russia of 18th century, where he's trying to rebuild. And the reality is that we are facing the most critical point in the history of Europe since the Second World War. And unfortunately, European leaders not realizing the gravity of the situation, where Europe has to come together and has to put some efforts, not like 2%, 3% GDP. We should be discussing how we're going to be actually helping Ukraine to stop the Russians. Because the only reason why Russia are not actually a doorstep of Europe is because Ukraine is not stopping them. And Putin will rebuild and come again. We should just not be kind of living in a dreamland.
I think that's a really interesting point, because the European allies have been very united, actually, since the 22nd of February, what was it, 2022, the day that Russia invaded Ukraine. I think NATO and Europe has been very united. But I agree with you. I don't think there's any comprehension of what is likely to happen over the next 5 or 10 years. And to talk about increasing defence spending from 2.5 to 2.6 to 3%, doesn't really go anywhere near where it needs to go. To my mind, we should be looking, in fact, I don't even think we should be talking about percentages of GDP. We should identify what we need and pay for it, whether it's 3%, 4%, 5%. I think we're going to have a national conversation about this over the course of the next few years. Peter, thank you very much indeed. More of your calls coming up. We'll also get a full report on the wildfires in southern Europe. But first, at 7:30, it's time for the news with Thomas Watts.
The King has delivered an address to the nation to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day.
For the millions of families gathered around their wireless sets, and for their loved ones still serving far from home, it was the message a battle-weary world had long prayed for. "The war is over," declared my grandfather, King George VI, in his address to the nation and Commonwealth on VJ Day 80 years ago today, 4 short words after 6 long years of bloodshed, fear and suffering.
It marks the date in 1945 when Japan surrendered to the Allies, ending World War II. A service will take place at the National Memorial Arboretum this morning, with a national silence at midday. President Trump and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin are preparing for their face-to-face summit in Alaska. Mr. Trump has raised the prospect of a second meeting involving Ukraine's leader Volodymyr Zelensky. LBC weather, dry and sunny in southern parts of the UK, cloudier further north with some showers in the north of Scotland. A high of 30 degrees.
This is LBC.
Introducing the Ford Capri. Rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter. And you could win the icon Rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. To enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
The Premier League is back. Whether you wear gold or claret, with 215 live matches, up from 128 last season, Sky Sports is the place to be to watch more of your team in the Premier League.
Oh, it's a beauty!
And what's better is you can get Sky Sports flexibly with a Now Pass. So if you just can't get enough of the Premier League, stream Sky Sports with Now and catch Liverpool v Bournemouth today.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for Squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply.
Big Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
A very good morning to you. It's 7.33 on LBC. This time every day you hear a business report. No different today. Michael Wilson is here, business commentator, former business editor for Sky News. Michael, very good morning to you. Let's start off with Rachel Reeves and non-doms.
Yes, I think so. I mean, the OBR, the Office of Budget Responsibility, predicted a few days ago that 25% of non-DOMs would as it were, quit the country. This apparently is not taking place. If you believe the HMRC payroll data, for example, which shows that this supposed exodus has not increased. So, in other words, the non-DOM tax, which is predicted to raise about £4 billion in 2026-27, then £6 billion the year after, will not have to be reversed. I think it actually speaks, I mean, it's fine about non-DOMs, it speaks to the wealth tax argument, I think, and for me, the wealth tax is people whose money is actually quite mobile. I feel if you want to tax those people, that's absolutely fine. But the majority of the country's money is not mobile. And what I think should concern them is the fact that we're not seeing an enormous amount of growth, for example, in entrepreneurs starting big companies because of increased taxation by this particular government. I think that's far more relevant to the future of the UK than this issue of non-DOMs. I mean, what the government will be saying is that Britain looks safe and stable at the moment. Well, I'm sure it does, as far as a lot of country, if you compare it to a lot of countries, and no doubt that companies prefer to set up in Britain because of our legal system. But that doesn't answer the fact that growth is strangled in this country because of increased taxes in the government and that will surely increase in future as energy costs rise, which they're bound to do.
Now, I can remember 32 years ago running a conference on expanding airport capacity in the southeast. Now, this argument has been going on for the last three decades. It's still continuing today.
It's still continuing today, and you would be let me tell you how bullish some of these people are. So Gatwick handles 45 million passengers a year. That's expected to grow to 880 million by the late 2030s. What we're seeing is a restatement of eight new gates opening at a cost of £140 million in Gatwick. That is all part of the general feeling about Gatwick, which is it is one of the world's busiest single runway airports in the world. It's expected that it will get another runway. There's been sort of agreement by government in this, but this is extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, what is one of the most unpleasant things of modern life? Going through an airport, I would suggest, and it's only going to
unless it's London City, Michael, which is a fantastic airport.
Yeah, well, that's you're lucky, you're very close to that. But trust me, Gatwick is not somewhere that you want to be early in the morning.
I know. Let's move on to HSBC, because they're plotting a Big Brother style crackdown on staff. It says in the Telegraph
today.
Are.
Now this is all about their new building. They have already obviously a massive building in Canary Wharf, which people will have seen. They're planning new city headquarters, and they will have 1,754 cameras trained on the staff. They say HSBC.
That's more than there are at LBC.
Well, it's 444 currently I've got no idea what LBC's like. You shouldn't
there's
see...
There's about eight of them staring at me at this moment.
This is apparently what HSBC is saying is this is for the safety and security of the staff. I don't think so. I think it's a lot to do with the so-called hybrid working. A lot of people, working from home still. It was only in July that HSBC's said, July this year, said that senior staff have to report to the office 4 days a week. I mean, where are we going with this? What do you want me to rant on about working from home?
No, I really don't.
But that's what I think these cameras are all about.
Okay, Michael, thank you very much indeed. That's Michael Wilson there, business commentator. Right, before we go to our next item on the wildfires in Europe, let's take a quick call on the Trump-Putin summit in Alaska, which starts, by the way, at 8:30 this morning, this evening, UK time. Rachel Johnson and Nick Abbott will have the latest from there throughout the evening. Sandy's in Amersham. Hello, Sandy.
Morning, Ian.
Morning.
Yeah, do I think there'll be any change? Absolutely not. I think it's theatre. I don't think anything will change because Europe is not prepared, quite rightly, to take this further against Putin. And Putin's not going to stop. He hasn't so far. He hasn't changed anything. I think he'll inch his way across Ukraine and nothing will happen until his demise. And then something will change, but we don't know what. Might be worse, it might be better.
What more do you think Europe should or shouldn't be doing?
Well, I don't think Europe should be going to war, that's for sure. There's nothing else they can do. Europe is supporting Ukraine with funds, with arms, with support, but that's as far as they're prepared to go, and it's quite right. We don't want to go to war with Putin.
Well, nobody wants to go to war, but the fact is Putin went to war with Ukraine. Ukraine is an independent sovereign nation, so therefore Europe has backed up Ukraine, and up to January this year, so did America. Now, the only thing, in my view, that will change this radically is if Trump really gets fed up with Putin and decides to arm Zelensky up to the hilt. That's the only thing that will change things materially. Because at the moment, yes. Russia, you're right, is in. You use the word inching. You're absolutely right on that. They're inching forward, and they have taken some territory in the last few weeks, but not a huge amount. So it's a bit like the First World War. There's complete stalemate. And I'm not sure, apart from America increasing arms to Ukraine, I'm not sure what else is going to change.
No, I don't think it will change. The only thing that could change things is Putin's demise. And then we don't know what that would bring. But while he's around, he is not going to budge. He'll just keep inching along in the way he is. And Putin will keep trying to do something because he wants to be seen as the man that solved it. He was going to do it in a few days, but that's past.
And do you think that Putin has basically outplayed him on the diplomatic front?
Yes. I think for Trump now, he's really struggling to find an avenue that will make him look better and that he's doing something to help the situation. Putin it's absolute stalemate.
Thank you very much, Sandy. Keep your calls coming, 0345 6060973. Now, at least three people have died and thousands have been forced to flee as wildfires continue to rage across southern Europe and as the continent experiences a wave of extreme heat. We're not just talking about the odd region. These fires are happening all over southern Europe, in Spain, in southern France, in Italy, and, of course, Greece. Well, Nick Pisa is a global reporter at the Mail Online who was in Catalonia during the wildfires. Nick, very good morning to you. How extensive are these wildfires compared to other years?
Well, as you said there in the introduction, it is across the whole of southern Europe, from Portugal over in the west, right across Spain, the south of France, over into Italy, and then down into the that eastern Mediterranean part around Greece and the islands, as well as the mainland. Figures say there's around about 500,000 hectares of land that has been affected by wildfires since the summer began. And to give you some idea of size, a football pitch is less than a hectare. So we are talking a huge swathes of countryside across southern Europe. And the largest one so far has been in the south of France near the Aude region, which affected around about, it's an area the size of Paris, they're saying, which was absolutely devastating across there. They've managed to put it out now, but obviously they're still damping down.
And this is much worse than previous recent years.
Yes. According to the European Forest Fire Information System, they have stats that they publish every day. They update it constantly every day. They have a live interactive map showing where there are fires burning. They're saying that this year it is worse than last year. They've also been, the EU has a civil protection mechanism which countries can contact, and they are helped out by other countries who are members of this organisation, and they send firefighters and huge Canadair planes. Now, I've seen these planes in action, actually. They're quite an awesome sight to see. They come in low over the sea, and they scoop up gallons and gallons of water. They then bank away and fly over towards the forest fire and then jettison this water onto the flames in the hope that it will extinguish the fire.
Three people have died. I mean, from the way you're talking, it's actually it seems to be a miracle that it's only three.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest with you, and that's in Spain this week, but there was another fire earlier this summer in Turkey where there were 10 firefighters were killed as they tried to tackle a blaze. That one that I mentioned in France last week in the Aude region, local resident, a 75-year-old woman, also perished in the flames. But as you say, yes, it is amazing that not many more people have been killed. But they do have this system. I was in Catalonia this week, actually, and they do have this alert system across Europe, and when people go on holiday they can sign up to these alerts and get these notifications. And whilst we were in Greece, we received numerous notifications while we were in Kefalonia warning us that there was a fire in the area and to keep our eyes and ears open for further alerts and to follow any warnings that were given by the local authorities. And the thing is, Ian, the heat that is being experienced at the moment, I know that we're experiencing sort of a little bit of heat here with 30 odd plus degrees, but in Greece where we were, it was 44 degrees literally every day. And the key thing is the wind is so strong, it just blows like a furnace, and this fans the flames and this creates the problem. And from Kefalonia we could see fires dotted across the island, but then across to Zante, which is another island that listeners may be familiar with, a very popular place to go on holiday, you can see the smoke hanging in the air. And as I mentioned earlier, you can see the Canadair planes flying over, trying to put out the fires with these huge volumes of water that they carry in their cargo hold.
Nick, thank you very much. That's Nick Peace, the global reporter at the Mail Online. Rob says on a text, Ian, can people, including yourself and Matt Fry, put aside their Trump derangement syndrome? A world leader is trying to stop a conflict from carrying on. Anyone else, you'd be lauding them. Robin Brentwood. Well, I don't think I suffer from Trump derangement syndrome. I certainly don't think Matt Fry does, because we judge someone on their record. And Trump's attitude to Putin has been, well, should we say, inexplicable, really, ever since he first came to power in 2016. He's always seemed to be almost enthralled to Putin, as if Putin has got something on him. Now, I've got no idea whether that is true or not, but his policy towards Putin has always been very, very strange. And, well, I mean, well, let's hear from you. Do you think we've got Trump derangement syndrome? I mean, I think you have to judge someone on their actions. And I've actually paid tribute to Donald Trump on some aspects of his foreign policy in his first term. I think his unpredictability can be a strength sometimes in his foreign policy. But I think Putin has run rings around him so far. And I'm not going to resile from that. Now, coming up after the news, I'll speak with the Defence Secretary, John Healey, as he prepares for today's VJ Day commemorations. But first, at 7:45, time for the news with Thomas Watts.
Events are taking place to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, including a national two-minute silence later. Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are preparing to meet in Alaska for their first face-to-face talks in 6 years. The High Court is expected to hear a council's attempt to close an asylum hotel in Essex. LBC weather, dry and sunny in southern parts of the UK, cloudier further north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. On the trains, London Overground's Lioness Line is suspended between Euston and Kilburn High Road. It's all down to a signal failure. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo Line. On the motorways, one lane's closed on the M4 eastbound just before junction 89 at Maidenhead. That's where a car's broken down. Also on the M25, clockwise on the exit slip road at junction 13. One lane's had to be closed because a car has broken down. In Tottenham, it's very busy on the A10 High Road going southbound to Monument Way. It's because of an accident where only one lane is open. And in Neasden, the North Circular Road's very busy westbound heading towards Brentfield Road. It's slow from Staples Corner.
This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well,
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
LBC.
The people have spoken. Drivers have voted. And the Auto Express Driver Power Family Car of the Year is, wait for it, the Vauxhall Astra. Chosen for its design, drive and onboard tech. Get behind the wheel and experience the award-winning Vauxhall Astra Griffin Hatch or Sports Tourer today. Two models, one offer. Both $325 a month with $325 initial rental. Search Astra Griffin now. Personal contract hire and Astra Griffin 1.2 manual, hatchback or sports tourer. 48 months, T's and C's, subject to status and availability. You will not own the car. Stellantis Financial Services.
You sound happy.
I've just spotted tuna in the fridge, and it's got my name all over it.
Well, be careful. It's a long way up.
Relax. We're insured, aren't we?
Nope. That's not what I've heard.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Seriously, we're not insured.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play.
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
10 to 8 on LBC. In a moment, we'll be talking to the Defence Secretary, John Healey, about VJ Day, what's going to happen in Alaska tonight, and much more besides. But first, let's go to Philip in Marlow. Philip, hi.
Morning, Ian.
Morning.
Ukraine, I think there's one thing that worries Putin more than the military equation that's going on, and that's the economic. But what we don't have here in the West is a thorough understanding of where the 10 years of sanctions and economic restrictions that we put on the Russians have taken us. I suspect the Russian economy is close to toppling, but I wouldn't know that.
Well, certainly the Russian people wouldn't know that, would they?
No, they wouldn't. So it would be very helpful to get a greater understanding of where we're at on that particular front, I think.
Well, all we can go on is what we hear from the so-called experts. And I think you're right. We're not hearing enough about this because the reason that the Soviet Union collapsed in the end, well, there were all sorts of reasons for it, but the main reason was that their economy collapsed. And it was because they couldn't keep up with the arms race, an arms race which arguably they started. So I think you've got a good point there, and it's something that maybe some of our media needs to look at a little more. Philip, thank you very much indeed. Well, let's talk to the Defence Secretary, John Healey. He's MP for Rawmarsh and Conisbrough. And, John, I think you're at the National Arboretum, aren't you?
Good morning. I am indeed. I'm honoured to be here. It's a deeply moving place, and I'm here to mark 80 years of VJ Day, victory over Japan. And this will be the national service celebration later today with the King and the Queen, the Prime Minister. A Red Arrows fly past, a Guard of Honour and 400 of our current forces that today serve and are inspired by the sacrifice and service of many of those who fought in the Far East campaign.
Why do you think it is that generally we don't know as much about the war in the Far East as we do about the war in Europe? I mean, distance obviously plays a part here. But do you think it's because a lot of the veterans from that war they've been very reluctant to talk about it in the same way that maybe the veterans that fought the Nazis have.
I think you find any ex-forces from any generation are often reluctant to talk about what they went through and the combat they saw, and indeed the loss of good comrades. I think the war in Europe was closer to home. The victory in Europe came 3 months before victory in Japan, so it was a bigger celebration, it was more immediate. And you're right that many of those who fought on until victory in Japan Day, which put an end to the Second World War for once and for all, they felt they were the forgotten army, and we owe them that duty today to remember their sacrifice. Remember quite how many British and Commonwealth servicemen were killed, not just in action, but in the jungle from tropical diseases, and who perished in the prisoner of war camps as well, in what was a brutal regime. And it's the biggest honour for me in 1 year in this job so far to be alongside 30 VJ veterans who were teenagers, lads when they left to fight, now over 100 years old, with some extraordinary stories. And this may be one of those final anniversaries in which we can hear their stories from them as part of the national celebration and recognition and tribute we pay today.
Now, as Defence Secretary, obviously your prime motivation is to stop a repeat of what happened in the 1930s and 1940s. How much does that weigh on your shoulders? Because it's not the same, I think, being Defence Secretary as being Secretary of State for Education or something like that. There's much more of a responsibility on your shoulders.
It certainly is a special responsibility. And this is a special day. And the King, in many ways, made the same point as you in his address, that there is a responsibility to learn from the conflicts of the past, to try and put an end to the conflicts today. And, of course, we think of Ukraine and the talks in Alaska, but also recognise the importance of striving for peace, the importance of allies in security. And this matters to us in the UK. It matters obviously most to the Ukrainians, but it matters to us in the UK because a secure Ukraine means a secure Europe, a more stable Europe in which we're not hit by the spikes in energy prices, the increase in inflation, the pressures on the cost of living that we've seen through the 3.5 years of Putin's war in Ukraine. But above all, there is a responsibility, and I think you've seen that in the calls that I've had with the defense minister in Ukraine and the secretary of the National Security Council there, and the meetings that Keir Starmer has had with European leaders, President Zelensky and President Trump, ahead of these discussions in Alaska. We have a role to stand by Ukraine. We have a role to intensify the diplomacy in the run-up to these talks and to try and support President Trump in brokering the discussions and negotiations that must in the end be the way that this conflict comes to an end.
Are you not disappointed, though, that given the fact this war is taking place in Europe, that there is no British or European voice at the table in Alaska this evening?
No, I see this as a really important first step that would not and could not be happening without President Trump. I see it as an important principle that any decisions and negotiations about Ukraine must involve Ukraine and President Trump's...
But they're not there either.
Well, President Trump's recognition that when he's talked to Putin today, his next step will be to involve President Zelensky. That's absolutely right. And what I think you've seen from the European leaders and the discussions with the Americans in the run-up to today is a recognition that for negotiations to succeed, and a ceasefire is required, and for negotiations to succeed, Putin must be serious about peace. He said 4 times in the last 6 months he wants peace, but at the same time he's been escalating attacks directly into Ukraine, not just on their troops, but on cities and killing civilians as well. And so this is a test of Putin, the talks today.
Now, earlier this morning, I spoke with Alexei Goncharenko. I'm sure you've met him over the years, the Ukrainian MP, who said success will be an unconditional ceasefire. Do you agree that would look like success? But and what of the land in the east of Ukraine that's been illegally occupied?
We'd all want to see an unconditional ceasefire. Those would be the conditions that make serious negotiations and a long-term peace more likely. In the end, the discussions about any territorial changes are for Ukraine, must involve Ukraine. And that's why the principle about no decisions about Ukraine without Ukraine is so fundamental to successful negotiations.
Can you tell us more about the story in the Daily Mail today? Where they say there are fears of a cover-up as the MOD admits to a nuclear incident at Trident's submarine base.
So this is I can tell you first of all that this is a discharge of water from part of the site, that the site on the Clyde there has some of the highest nuclear safety standards anywhere in the world, and that at no point, and this has been confirmed by the regulator, at no point was there any risk to health of the public or to the health of the personnel on the base. And the disclosure of these environmental incidents has actually come because of the decision that I've taken that we, as a new government, during the course of this year, are determined to set new levels of transparency and accountability to Parliament. And so that is part of the disclosure of information about environmental incidents that we will now be making more regularly.
Now, you always like the fun question at the end of an interview, I know, John, so let me put this one to you. I don't know whether it counts as fun, but Nigel Farage has written to the PM to ask him to appoint members of Reform UK to the House of Lords. Now, he's got a point, doesn't he, given that 4.1 million people voted for them in 2024 and their position in the polls?
Well, if you want to treat it as a bit of fun, I mean, this is the same Nigel Farage that called for the abolition of the House of Lords and wants to fill it with his cronies. But, you know, look, I'm not sure that Parliament's going to be benefit from more Putin apologists like Nigel Farage, to be honest.
Oh, that's quite strong, isn't it, to call him a Putin apologist?
Oh, look at what he said about Russia. Look at what he said about Putin in the past. Look what he said in the middle of the general election campaign. Look, we at this point where maximum pressure needs to be put on Ukraine, on Putin to support Ukraine in negotiations, when the maximum condemnation of Putin is required from someone who is sitting down with Trump in Alaska, but turning up the attacks on Ukraine, it needs all voices. And I have to say, the voice of reform is conspicuously absent in any of our discussions and any of our defence debates about Ukraine and about Russia. And I'd really welcome Nigel Farage weighing in alongside us and the other parties in the House of Commons to condemn Putin and to work, as we're trying to do as well, to reinforce the prospects of peace.
Thank you very much indeed. That's John Healey, Defence Secretary and MP for Rawmarsh and Conisbrough. Well, coming up after the news, as the price of the fat jab Mounjaro will almost triple, if you've taken the drug, will this deter you from using it? But first, at 1 minute past eight, it's time for the news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock on the 80th anniversary of VJ Day. Military pipers have started a day of events commemorating the date in 1945 when Japan surrendered to Allied forces, ending the Second World War. An estimated 71,000 soldiers from Britain and Commonwealth countries died. The King has delivered an address to the nation, calling it a vital lesson for our times.
In recalling so much suffering, we must not lose sight of how great was the cause and how sweet the victory. For those heroes of VJ Day gave us more than freedom, they left us the example of how it can and must be protected. Countries and communities that had never before fought together learned to coordinate their efforts across vast distances, faiths and cultural divides.
The King, Queen and Prime Minister will attend a service at the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire this morning. A national two-minute silence will be observed at midday, including here on LBC. Sir Keir Starmer has said Ukraine is fighting for the same values as the Allies in the Second World War. He made the comments ahead of the much-anticipated meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin in Alaska tonight. Mr. Trump has suggested a second meeting involving Kyiv could be held if the talks are successful. LBC's Matt Fry says there are constraints on any realistic prospect of a ceasefire.
For Trump, it's very much the idea that he's living up to his campaign promise of, you know, making peace at some stage, you know, obviously not in the first 24 hours of taking office, but maybe in the, you know, first, you know, 24 months. So that in itself would be an achievement. And for Putin, it's his ability to flatter Trump into thinking that he's making history.
A legal attempt to stop a hotel in Essex being used to house asylum seekers is expected to be heard later. Epping Forest District Council has applied to the High Court for a temporary injunction over the use of the Bell Hotel. It says the area has experienced unprecedented levels of protest and disruption. Social media influencers are to highlight the risks of travelling abroad for cosmetic procedures. Ministers say the TikTok campaign will help people make informed choices before undergoing hair transplants or dental work. Eli Lilly, the maker of the weight loss jab Mounjaro, is increasing the price of the drug. Some private patients could see the cost go up by 170% to about £330 a month for the highest dose. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 91.77. It closed up 12 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 16. LBC weather, dry and sunny in southern parts of the UK, cloudier further north with showers in northern Scotland, a high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Call and WhatsApp message now. 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale.
And a very good morning to you. It's 5 minutes past eight on LBC. It's Ian Dale in for Nick Ferrari for one day only while Nick has a bit of a break. Now, the front page of the Daily Mail, a swift change of image as Taylor unveils... Oh, it's not that story we're covering. No, we're going to do the main story on the front page of the Daily Mail. Fat jab price soars after Trump threat. Cost of Mounjaro up 170% as president demands UK pays more. Now, if you are on Mounjaro, and many, many of you listening probably are, then this will come as a bit of a blow because most people on Mounjaro are paying for it themselves. Now, West Streeting, not that long ago, said that it would be available on the NHS. But if the price of it triples, then the NHS surely can't afford to provide Mounjaro and its equivalents on the NHS, can it? Because we're going to have to all be paying for that. Now, there is an argument that it's in the long term, it will save a lot of money because it means that people won't become so obese, there won't be a strain on the NHS. But already, I think it's apparently going to cost $12 billion, so that would go up to $36 billion. Well, there has to come a limit, doesn't there? So my question to you is, will this price increase stop you from using Mounjaro? And what success have you had from the jab, if any? 0345 6060973. I know several people, friends of mine, who are on it and absolutely swear by it. But then I wonder, what happens after 2 years? I mean, you can't surely stay on it for the rest of your life. That surely can't be healthy. In the end, we all have to exercise more self-discipline, don't we? These drugs may work in the short term, But what about the long term? 0345 6060 973. Now, these figures are quite stark, because the Mail says in America, people are paying the equivalent of £813 for one 15-milligram QuickPen from an online pharmacy. In Canada, it's £425. Germany, £421. UAE, £349. Australia, £331. And in the UK, £199. Well, how is that possible? I'm not sure that's right, because I looked into this, well, I don't know, 9 months ago, when I was feeling particularly fat one day, and I thought, okay, let's, everyone swearing by this, let's try it out. So I went on an online website, can't remember which one, and it was going to cost me £475 for, I think, 3 months. And I thought, that's a bit steep. I didn't do it in the end, and I don't regret not doing that, but so many people are, literally millions of people in this country. And one friend of mine, who is slightly overweight, but not very much, in his early 30s, is on Mounjaro, and I'm thinking, what are you doing? This is for people who are clinically obese, with a body mass index of more than 35. And this guy is probably around 24, 25, something like that. Because you can buy it online, you do have to go through tests, but you can get it online relatively easily, and there is a black market that's developed in it now. It's almost becoming a fashion, I think. Well, let's go to Jarzio, who's a Cambridge academic and author of Why Calories Don't Count, How We Got the Science of Weight Loss Wrong. Jarz, very good morning to you. What do you make of this story on the front page of the Mail? If the price triples, people just aren't going to buy it, are they?
Well, yes. Well, first of all, good morning. Thank you for having me on. I don't think it's good news, to be fair. I mean, for two reasons. For a personal reason, my son is actually on it. I put my son on it at the beginning of this year, and we're paying for it privately, and so that's not good news. But I think it has 1.6 million, I think, roughly speaking, like that, doses of both the Novo drug and the Lilly drug. So both Ozempic and Mounjaro were given out last month. 1.6 million in this country, 95% of it privately. And the people who needed it are probably getting really good clinically relevant weight loss. So I don't think this is going to be great news, at least in the short to medium term.
What about for the NHS? Can you just explain to us the rules by which you can get this on the NHS at the moment? Because somebody here, it's Gareth, says, Ian, please get your facts right before you put scare stories out. The NHS has a low price fixed in long term, so the price hike won't affect the NHS. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So the NHS are doing... I think here's the thing. Eli Lilly obviously had negotiated the price with the NHS. They were looking, look, this is a country with an NHS. Why are these people going to take it privately? Well, as it turns out, the vast majority of people are taking it privately in the UK. The numbers you read out for the other countries, the United States and the rest of Europe, are paying more than the UK. And so because we have an NHS, Lilly just sort of negotiated it as such. Now that they're seeing that so many people are taking it privately, maybe they're going to put it up to and match the rest of Europe.
Because it does seem odd. I mean, if these Daily Mail figures are right, £199 in the UK, £425 in Canada, and America double that. I mean, how can that be?
That's a very good question. I don't know why. You're going to have to ask why the drugs are so expensive in the United States. I think you got to fund the healthcare system there. And I'm putting system in air quotes. I think because it's a fully privatized system like the Wild West, then they got to pay for everything. So I think that's why there is inequality in terms of drug prices. I don't think we should pay as much in the United States. Of course, I don't think so. I think everyone needs to pay a fair price. I think these are powerful drugs. They are drugs. You're right. They're not meant to be a cosmetic drug. But I don't think the price hikes are a positive thing. Remember, though, these drugs will run out of patent at some point. So Ozempic goes off patent in 2032, and Mounjaro goes off patent, I think, in 2034, 2036, roughly that. It's a long time. It's not that long from now. And the moment that happens, generics will take hold, and then the price will plummet. So this is a short to medium term, but still bad news, I would think.
Charles, thank you very much indeed. That's Charles Yeo there. Now, Claire in Colchester joins me. Claire, you've been on the Mounjaro drug for 14 weeks now. How's it going? Good morning.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah, it's going well for me. So I've lost, I had about 4 stone to lose. I've lost about almost 2.5 stone. I've stayed on the 5 mils. So I started on the 2.5 and then went up to 5, and I've just stayed on 5. And then I just lose, you know, like a pound or pounds and a half a week, which is fine for me now, because I've only got about 1 stone and a bit to go.
And tell me how you came to be on this drug in the first place.
Well, I stabilised my weight. I've always been a little bit yo-yo-y, within like 1.5 stone of where I thought I should be. When I went into menopause about 5 years ago, it just went, you know, 4 stone just went on, and it was really, I just couldn't get it off. I do think about food. I'm a bit of an emotional eater. And I just thought, I've done Weight Watchers, Slimming World, you know, fasting, intermittent fasting. I just couldn't manage to do it. The weight is really stubborn. And then my willpower was shot. I just couldn't manage to do it. So I thought, I'm going to try it. So I thought it's quite, you know, it's something I could afford at the time.
Did you go to your GP?
No, I didn't. I did it online. I did it with a pharmacy online. It's online, and they contact your GP. Mm. So they have to get the okay from your from the GP to say that you can have it. They do like an assessment. They then contact your GP, and then they come back to you and say you can have it. And then every time I reorder, I have to do the same assessment again, and they contact my GP, and I find out like a day later that, yeah, it's okay and you can have it.
And how long do you think you will be on it for? Because, of course, if you stop taking it, maybe this price increase will inevitably mean that you stop taking it. I don't want to buy into your financial situation.
Yeah, well, I'm not rich or anything, no. So, I mean, I work, but at the moment that it's affordable for me and it's important. I have arthritis and, you know, I need to make sure that I've got too much excess weight on my joints, because otherwise it can be uncomfortable. So if it's like £50, I can probably go say, yeah, that's fine. I could do that. If it's any more than that, I couldn't do it, because I couldn't afford it.
And do you do any exercise?
Well, I walk, but to be honest, I've never gone to the gym. I don't enjoy that. I like walking, and I've continued to do that. So I've literally kept my exercise the same, if that makes sense. But I've just changed how I eat on this, because I can't eat processed foods on this, because otherwise I get side effects. So I've had to change. I've had to eat quite cleanly. I do treat, like, sometimes, like now I could have, if we had a fish and chips supper, I could have some of that. I can't eat as much of that, but I can have a bit of that.
Why would you have a fish and chips supper if you're trying to lose weight?
No, if we went out for a treat, with my husband, and we had fish and chips. I mean, when I say fish and chips supper, I literally can have about 5 chips. I can't eat that much of that type of food. So you have to eat really cleanly. And when I say every now and then, it might be, you know, once a month, you know, we'll go out as a family. You just can't eat it. It's really hard, because it makes you feel unwell. And also you get full really quick. So anything like that, you just can't eat much of it. At all.
Couldn't give up chips, Claire. I just couldn't.
You could have a few, but not many. That's the problem.
All right, Claire, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. So, Claire, if she is priced out of this, she won't be able to take it anymore, because she is paying for it privately. What's your experience with Mounjaro? What success have you had from it? And will the increase in price stop you from using it? And of course, other brands are available. It's 16 minutes past 8 on LBC. Let's get the news headlines with Thomas Watts.
The King has delivered an address to the nation to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day. President Trump and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin are preparing for their face-to-face summit in Alaska. And the Defence Secretary John Healey has told Ian that Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist. LBC weather, dry and sunny in southern parts of the UK, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Still very slow in Tottenham on the A10 High Road going southbound to Monument Way. It's all down to an accident where only one lane is open. On the M25, clockwise at Junction 13 at Staines, one lane's closed on the exit slip road, and that's where a car has broken down. Also busy in Fulham on the Wandsworth Bridge Road going northbound to the New Kings Road. And on the trains, the Lioness Line still suspended between Euston and Kilburn High Road, and that's all down to a signal failure. Also on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone, and there are minor delays on the rest of the line. And also on the Underground, Swiss Cottage Station remains closed.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High-pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases, and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry, and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
LBC.
The people have spoken. Drivers have voted. And the Auto Express Driver Power Family Car of the Year is, wait for it, the Vauxhall Astra. Chosen for its design, drive and onboard tech. Get behind the wheel and experience the award-winning Vauxhall Astra Griffin Hatch or Sports Tourer today. Two models, one offer. Both £325 a month with £325 initial rental. Search Astra Griffin now. Personal contract hire and Astra Griffin 1.2 manual hatchback or Sports Tourer. 48 months, T's and C's, subject to status and availability. You will not own the car. Stellantis Financial Services.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
At TfO, we're opening up more of London for everyone with step-free access. We're continuing to improve accessibility at many of our stations, and now over 200 stations and counting have step-free access, including the entire Elizabeth Line, DLR and all tram stops. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
The Ferrari at Breakfast with Ian Dale. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
20 past eight on LBC. Right, let's go to your calls on Monjaro. Kirsten is in Bracknell. Hello, Kirsten.
Hello there. Hi, good morning.
Morning. What would you like to tell me?
Just that I've been on Monjaro for 4 months since end of March, and to be honest, I think it's the best thing I ever did. I wasn't severely overweight, but my BMI was over 30, so clinically I was obese. Because I'm quite short, so it look probably larger than I was. In that time, I've lost nearly 2 stone, and I'm really, really happy. I'm so glad I did it. The doctor recommended it, but I do pay for it privately.
Could you not have done it without going on Monjaro? Could you not have changed your diet? Could you not have exercised more? I suppose, to be cruel, could you not have exercised more self-discipline?
Do you know, I tried and tried, but obviously not hard enough, and I just needed that little push. And now, I was always very slim until I was about 35. I'm now 54. And I put on, in those years, about 3.5 stone through just living, drinking alcohol, you know what I mean, more than I ever did when I was younger, just lifestyle changes. And I feel that without it, and feeling as I do now, having lost the weight, I feel amazing. So I don't ever want to be like that again. Do you know what I mean? And I still have another stone to go. I do exercise. I walk my dog every day about 7 miles. Always have done, even when I was 11 and a half, nearly 12 stone I got up to. So, yes, for me, it's been a godsend.
If we were talking a year's time, I mean, are you still, do you think you'll still be on it in a year's time, a lower dose?
No, not at all. I need to go down to 9 stone in my mind. I'm currently 10 stone 2, and I think I can make that in about 3 months. and I will start to wean myself off. I'm on the 7 milligrams at the moment. I thought about going up to 10, but I've ordered another 7 because my appetite is just where I need it to be. I can control the food noise. And I think then I'll start going down, and I reckon I'll be off it by February, all being well.
Well, best of luck, Kirsten. Thank you very much. Sally's on the Wirral. Hello, Sally.
Good morning, Ian.
Morning.
I started on Mounjaro over a year ago, and I lost 4.5 stone. And since about March time, I've just been trying to maintain my weight. And what I've been doing is I've been using the Mounjaro. Initially, I used it every 2 weeks instead of every 1 week to stay the same. Now I'm down to about using it every 3 weeks. But I have still kept buying it every month. I'm stocking it up in my fridge because I'm terrified of putting the weight back on again.
I think that's a very typical thing to think. Last year, when I had my gallbladder out, I lost 1.5 stone. And
yes.
I was determined not to put it back on. Guess what happened?
You put it back on.
Exactly.
Because, yeah,
because I like stuff in my face too much.
Well, I do find that I eat a lot less than I used to. So when I eat normally, for want of a better expression, I'm not eating the amounts that I used to eat previously, if that makes sense. But all the cravings all come back.
Mm.
And whilst I can control it some of the time, other times when you're feeling a bit low, you just give in to it. And so that's why I sort of like still keep hold of it to use it as I'm going along. But now that it's going up in price, I don't know that I'm going to be able to afford to keep buying it.
Well, and I think you'd be in the same position as many, many other people. Not many people could afford a tripling in the price. Thank you very much indeed, Sally. Laura says, Ian, could you let us know if Nick is all right? He's more than all right. He's on his honeymoon. So don't worry about Nick. He's having a fine old time, I'm sure. Now, let's go back to VJ Day. It's something we're going to be covering right through the programme today. Now, this morning, we've heard from King Charles to mark 80 years since victory in Japan.
On this day of profound remembrance, I speak to you in that same spirit of commemoration and celebration as we honour anew all those whose service and sacrifice saw the forces of liberty prevail.
Now, commemorations are taking place up and down the country to mark the occasion. One exhibition has opened at the Outernet venue in Tottenham Court Road in London. Letters from VJ Day sees family members read out letters from their relatives, which were written during the latter stages of World War II. LBC's Henry Riley went along to meet with some of those family members and filed this report.
My name is Veronica Solander and my father was Morris Reed.
The VJ Letters to Loved Ones initiative sees relatives read out their family's letters during the latter stages of World War II to mark victory over Japan Day.
I am okay and intend to remain so.
Veronica is reading out a letter from her father, Morris Reed, an RAF airman who was a prisoner of war.
He was in Singapore, had been in Singapore for 2 weeks, was captured and sent to Java, where he remained a prisoner of war for 3.5 years. He was 6 foot tall and weighed 6.5 stone when he came home. Oh, is my father coming off the page, the whole letter?
Really?
Yeah, very much so, yeah. My daughters and I just sat all afternoon and cried. And I often look at it because it is emotional, yeah.
What else does he talk about in the letter? Does he talk about what it was like, the conditions,
yes,
at the camp?
Yes, he talks about, I mean, one paragraph is, we're all naturally browned off with this life, but on the whole have very little to grumble about, even though we do. Concerts are got up pretty frequently. We have football matches every day, badminton and table tennis.
My name is Brian Sanderson from Hull, and my father was in the Royal Navy in the Far East, 44 to 46. I'll think of you where you are, if it be near or far, I'll think of you. We'll meet again someday when dreams come true. He was called up in 44, and he fought in the Far East at all the times against the Japanese. You've got to imagine what they're going through. We're okay, we've got social media, but they went up there, they relied on letters. So it was just the writing, but it's the words back home. To my mother, who was his fiancée in those days, he came back in 46, and then they got married in 47.
How did it feel for you reading those words? Because they're, of course, your father's words.
It's amazing. It's very, very emotional. To see my father up there, and then to read his words after over 80 years.
How important do you think it is that we remember VJ Day and that stories like your father's are told?
Well, my father always used to say to my mother, you were back home dancing in May on V-Day, I still had kamikaze pilots coming down on me. The Second World War generation is leaving us. You must remember what they went through.
VJ Letters to Loved Ones is currently on display at the Outernet in London's Tottenham Court Road, and it will be there until Saturday.
Well, that was LBC's Henry Riley reporting from the Letters from VJ Day exhibition at the Outernet, Tottenham Court Road. And if you're in London over the next couple of days, do go and have a look, because I think we were all moved by that report. Mark in Surrey is a cheeky bagger. He says, so Ian, tell me, how much do you actually weigh? Normally I would say, mind your own business, Mark, but I will tell you, because I'm 6'2". I have a body mass index of about 28, 29, and I think my average weight, the weight I aspire to be, is between 17 and 17 and a half stone. Actually, I aspire to be 15 stone, but that's never going to happen. And I'm at the moment 17 stone 10, because I did actually weigh myself yesterday after about 3 months, because I thought I might be well over 18. So there you are. There's an insight into my weight traumas. Sean's in Clacton. Hello, Sean.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
Morning. I'm doing okay, thank you. What would you like to say?
Good, I'm all good, thank you. I don't want to come across like rude when I speak like this, but I'm really anti this like Mounjaro pen and this like appetite suppressant kind of drug. I don't think it's healthy at all in a start of things, because obviously everyone that is using it, yeah, they might be losing weight, they're suppressing their appetite, but the minute they stop taking this pen when the price goes through the roof, you know, they're only going to put the weight back on. And I do also hate the fact that I've got to say, like, it's common sense, you know, the more you move, the more weight you're going to lose, and the less you eat. But there's ways you can do things about it, and I could stretch on and talk for hours and hours about how diets can be adjusted and how you could, you know, consume a protein-rich diet and have your fats at a bare minimum and your carbs at a decent amount, and you'd lose weight easily. It's just quite sad to see how people are so dependent on a drug to help them lose weight when it just takes common sense.
Well, that's okay if you have great self-discipline, but most people don't. That's the problem.
Of course. And it's quite sad to see, because obviously over the years, I think things have become more comfortable for life and for people to pick at, you know, the worst of foods instead of the better of foods. And that's all it takes, is a little bit of a change. Instead of, you know, picking up a bag of crisps, you know, you've got to eat something a bit healthier, you know, eat an apple or something. It's common sense, really, you know, a typical kind of saying.
Well, it is common sense, but not everybody possesses common sense, do they, Sean? That's the problem. And if you offer someone an easy way out, an easy way to lose weight, well, of course they're going to take it. Why wouldn't you? I just worry about what the long-term effects of these drugs are, because you can't possibly keep on these things for the rest of your life. That is going to have terrible health consequences, I would have thought. Thank you very much indeed. We'll come to more of your calls on the future of Mounjaro after a probable trebling of the price of the drug in the next few months. That's all in just a few minutes time, but first let's get the news headlines at 8:31 with Thomas Watts.
Sir Keir Starmer says Ukraine is fighting for the same values as the Allies in the Second World War. Events are taking place to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, including a national two-minute silence at midday. Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are preparing to meet in Alaska for their first face-to-face talks in 6 years. They will discuss the prospect of peace in Ukraine at the much-anticipated summit this evening. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, has told Ian he believes Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist. He's claimed Reform UK is conspicuously absent from any discussion on Ukraine, a claim we've put to the party. LBC weather, dry and sunny in southern parts of the UK, cloudier further north with some showers in the north of Scotland, a high of 30 degrees.
This is LBC.
Get a step closer to winning a huge £20,000. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Win Plus, great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Leading Britain's conversation. Message Ian Dale on WhatsApp now. LBC.
8.33 on LBC. It's Ian Dale sitting in for Nick Ferrari. Why is Nick AWOL today, says Richard. He's not AWOL. He is A. He's on his honeymoon, so give the guy a break, Richard. Now, let's continue with your calls on Manjaro, because the front page of the Daily Mail screams a headline that Manjaro is going to triple in price because of Donald Trump's tariffs. Well, effectively, he wants the drug to be available in America at exactly the same price as it is in Europe. And it's about double the price in America, which, I mean, the economics of this are just mad, aren't they? Anna is in Powys in Wales. Hello, Anna.
Good morning.
Good morning. Now, how has Manjaro changed your life?
So, in the call that you just had spoke about laziness or making the right choices. Mm. I'm extremely active. I have a farm. I'm more active than most people. However, most of my adult life, I've had an addiction to sugar. And when I spoke to my GP, when I discovered Manjaro, he told me that sugar addiction is as powerful as a Class A drug addiction. So whenever I tried to cut down on sugar, I would get the shakes, I would get headaches. Sometimes I would end up in bed with like a flu from the withdrawal symptoms. And what Manjaro has done, it's enabled me to break that cycle. And I've been on it since September. I've lost 6 stone. And I'm confident now that I've broken that cycle. I've been able to get it out of my system, make right choices. If I don't want it to go for everybody else or myself, however, I think I've got a new, completely new life. I've reset myself. So I think I'll be okay without it. But I feel incredibly sad for anybody at the beginning of their journey, because I can't see how they're going to afford to continue.
6 stone. I mean, you must feel like a completely different person.
I do. I had a chronic cough that used to make me cough in the night until I was sick. I didn't sleep too good. I just feel so much better. And hopefully I'm not going to be a burden on the NHS as well.
And, I mean, do people actually make a comment to you? Because you must have changed your appearance dramatically, losing 6 stone.
Yes.
Do people know what... I mean, I guess you hope that you look a lot better than you did. but some people don't. I mean, some people, if they lose that amount of weight, they actually don't look better. But are you happy with the way that you look?
Yeah, I'm really, really happy. But for me, I must be getting old, darling. It's about how I feel. I just feel so much healthier. And, you know, my boss jokes that I'm like the Avon lady about it, because anybody that compliments me, I just say, oh, I'm cheating. You know, I'm quite proud of the fact that, you know, this drug has helped me. And I really think it can help people. If you're stuck with that addiction cycle, it's not about willpower. I really, really tried. But it does have a grip on you, sugar addiction. If you look it up, it is a real thing.
Okay, Anna, thank you very much indeed. We'll come back to more of your calls in just a few minutes' time. Yesterday on my Twitter feed, I saw an advertisement from the Conservative Party. Let me read it to you. It's got a very sort of tabloidy headline, Asylum Seeker? here's your list of perks. And then at the bottom, they've got a picture of a boat in the channel full of asylum seekers. And then they list about 12 different things, which they call perks, as to the things that asylum seekers supposedly get when they come to this country. Let me read out a few of them. I won't read them all. Housing and food provided directly by the state. Hotel accommodation, including three-star hotels with facilities such as free Wi-Fi, bars, restaurants, gardens and terrace. Weekly allowance of £49.18 per person. Access to food banks, free cooking lessons, HC2 certificates giving free dental care, prescriptions, eye tests, glasses, contact lenses, wigs and travel to medical treatment. University bursaries, scholarships and fee waivers for asylum seekers. And it goes on, including free swimming lessons, discounts on theatre shows, etc. Now, I'm not questioning any of those facts, and I would question whether asylum seekers should be entitled to many of the things that they are apparently getting courtesy of some local councils. I'm not sure if there aren't Conservative councils actually providing some of these so-called perks. My objection to this advert is not so much on the content, but as to the effect, because what it's designed to do is to make people think worse of asylum seekers. And I think language has consequences in this context. And whether you could say a lot of these things, some of these things are perks, but many of them aren't. I mean, what do the Conservatives suggest? That people shouldn't get any kind of accommodation, that they shouldn't get any kind of food if they are waiting for their asylum claims to be carried out. All this does is whip up feeling against asylum seekers, and haven't we got enough of that in our society at the moment? This is not me being woke. I don't think that there should be free sports and leisure tickets and trips, etc. Free swimming, group exercise classes and gyms. I mean, I am against a lot of these things, but all it's designed to do is to whip up anti-asylum seeker feeling, and we know where that can lead, do we not? Well, Lara Brown is commissioning editor of The Spectator and joins me. Lara, very good morning. What do you make of this Conservative advert?
I think the first thing to say is there's a level of disingenuity in this advert. The asylum seeker bill is really high. I think people have a right to know that their taxation money is being spent on this service. Around £5.7 million a day is spent on asylum seekers, but most of that is in accommodation and hotels. So while some of these perks, you know, swimming lessons, discounted theatre tickets run by local councils are, I would say, wrong and shouldn't be used, the bulk of the money is the accommodation problem, which needs solving. The difficulty here is I don't really know what the Conservatives are proposing. The issue is that people who are arriving in this country are spending about 400 days here before their claim is processed. And in that time, you do have to house them. So the Conservatives need to have a really clear plan about how they would prevent people from being in this country for 400 years. I guess their strategy is
400 days.
I guess their strategy would be a third country, but I think fleshed out policy on that would be more interesting to see rather than focusing on these perks. And the Labour government need to answer this question because it is getting to be very expensive. We cannot afford the £2.1 billion a year that asylum accommodation is costing. And I see your point, Ian, about not wanting to whip up anti-asylum seeker sentiment. But free speech is important, and knowing where your tax money is going is important.
No, I agree with that.
I think people,
But I think there are ways of doing it. Rather than put out some sort of tabloidy stunt advert, there are ways of doing that. And it's interesting that the response to this under the comments, mainly from Reform UK people, was to say, well, this is all very well, but all of this happened when you lot were in power as well. I mean, this didn't start happening on July the 5th, 2024. This was going on under a Conservative government too.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing new in that list that I'm aware this government introduced. As I said, the really expensive stuff in the list is national stuff, most focused around accommodation, which is unavoidable. If somebody is going to be here and unable to work, and they shouldn't be able to work because it's not safe, because they're not documented, we need to accommodate them. That's an unfortunate fact. And the local council stuff has been going on for a long time, and that's individual local councils making decisions. And we've given local councils the freedom to choose how they spend their money. So you're right, this is something that the Conservatives do have to shoulder some responsibility for, because these policies were happening, you know, before July 24.
Laura, thank you very much indeed. That's Laura Brown there, commissioning editor of The Spectator. Now, if you were listening just before 8 o'clock, you will have heard me speaking to the Defence Secretary, John Healey, and he claimed that Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist.
Look, I'm not sure that Parliament's going to be benefit from Putin apologists like Nigel Farage, to be honest.
Oh, that's quite strong, isn't it, to call him a Putin apologist?
Oh, look at what he said about Russia, look at what he said about Putin in the past, look what he said in the middle of the general election campaign.
And he went on and on. I wasn't quite expecting that answer, if I'm honest. Richard Tice was listening. He's Deputy Leader of Reform UK and MP for Boston and Skegness. It's only fair to give Richard a right of reply to that. I was quite surprised by John Healey's comment there, Richard. I guess you were.
More than that, I nearly crashed my car in fury, frankly. I think that Mr. Healey, the Secretary of State, may be suffering a bit of August sunstroke. He seems to have forgotten that on multiple occasions I've stood in the House of Commons, I've supported him in what he's doing with regard to Ukraine. Indeed, I've personally urged the government to go somewhat further and to use the frozen Russian assets in our central bank, some £25 billion or so, rather than just use the interest on that, actually use the capital. And the government has consistently refused to do so. So I completely reject the Secretary of State's outrageous allegations. Just last year, I went to Ukraine, I donated a five-figure sum, I took medical supplies over there, I met with drone manufacturers, I stood at the cemeteries of the fallen. So, yeah, I think it's absolutely outrageous, his comments.
Well, to be fair, he wasn't making those comments about you, was he? And I don't think anybody can question your opposition to Putin and your support for Ukraine.
He said reform parliamentarians like Nigel. In other words, he was inferring all of us, and we take that pretty personally, frankly.
It is true, though, that in the past, Nigel Farage has made some relatively positive comments about Vladimir Putin.
He made one comment about Putin a decade ago. He also, and I think not unreasonably, we have to question judgments and political decisions that were made in the past. For example, back in 2008, when the United States wanted to allow Ukraine to become a member of NATO. Let's remember, it was France and Germany that rejected that proposal, and the UK was barely at the meeting. So mistakes have been made in the past, but in order to bring this hideous war to an end, it's right to provide support to the world leaders trying to negotiate a peace. And Nigel is specifically talking about the quality of the security guarantees, which are essential as part of any enduring ceasefire.
So the comments that Nigel made in 2014, he said the way he played the whole Syria thing, brilliant. He resigns from that now, does he?
Those comments were made a decade ago about a specific moment. That doesn't mean that he supports Putin. He's on numerous occasions said that Putin is the aggressor. We know that, and we've said that consistently in the House of Commons and outside the House of Commons. And so I think, as I say, John Healey maybe is having a bit of sunstroke or something, or maybe they're just desperate because they're flailing in the polls and we're consistently 9 or 10 points ahead.
Just to clear up exactly what Nigel said, and this is just before the last election, this was in a BBC appearance. He said, "Hang on a second, I said I disliked him as a person but admired him as a political operator because he's managed to take control of running Russia." I don't know any other British politician, apart from people really on the fringes, who take that view.
That was a comment that was made about 10 years ago for a specific point. That doesn't mean that one supports him or is an apologist for him. It's just an outrageous slander by the Secretary of State, and it just shows how desperate the Labour Party are, because we're leading in the polls, because we've got the right policies and the right proposals. And let's just remind everybody, at the last general election, it was only Reform that said we should get defence spending to 2.5% within 3 years and 3% within 6 years. And I'm delighted that the Labour did actually listen and learn from our manifesto and have now copied us.
Richard, thank you very much indeed. That's Richard Tice there, Deputy Leader of Reform UK and MP for Boston and Skegness. In a moment, we'll take more of your calls on Monjaro and talk to the Shadow Defence Secretary, James Cartledge, about VJ Day. It's 8:46 and here's the news headlines with Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are preparing to meet in Alaska for their first face-to-face talks in 6 years. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, has claimed Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist. And events are taking place to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, including a national two-minute silence at midday. LBC weather, dry and sunny in the south, a bit cloudier further north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. London Overground's Lioness Line can't run between Euston and Kilburn High Road. It's all down to a signal failure. Severe delays on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. And then there are minor delays on the rest of the line and also minor delays on the central line as well, following an investigation at Stratford. On the roads, very busy in Tottenham on the A10 High Road going southbound to Monument Way. That's because of an accident. Very busy on the M4 eastbound onto the elevated section. The M20 25 is slow anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel, and also anti-clockwise it's very slow to Junction 12 at the M3.
This is LBC.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £201 million!
It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Subject to currency fluctuations, the jackpot is capped at €250 million. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddie.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
It's official. We're the Lidlest on price, which have crowned us the cheapest supermarket this July, beating seven other supermarkets, including their loyalty prices. For the Lidlest prices, you know you can always rely on us. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price.
Findings based on independent price comparison of 76 items by which every day in July 2025.
Arenas full of fans. Stars taking it to another level. The excitement, the glory, the action. And you could be behind it all. Kickstart your career in esports with Global Academy's new esports production sixth form course. Get the skills and knowledge to join a fast-growing media industry. And you could even join Global Academy's own esports team. Thinking what next after GCSEs? Then find out more about the esports production sixth form course at globalacademy.com.
Leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10 to 9 on LBC. Today is the 80th anniversary of VJ Day. It was essentially the day that brought an end to the Second World War, which had been going on since September 1939. And I've often wondered why it is that we don't really know as much about the war in the Far East as we do the war in Europe. Now, you can say, well, it's all down to distance, but I think it goes deeper than that. I think it is partly because the way that war was conducted in the Far East by the Japanese, and we can say that the Germans were incredibly ruthless and cruel, but you hear some of the stories of the things that happened in the Far East at the hands of the Japanese and you just shake your head in disbelief. And I think that is partly why a lot of veterans just wouldn't talk about it, because they just wanted to put it at the back of their minds. I don't think many of them ever could. How could you when you witness that most brutal cruelty? Let's have a word with James Cartledge, Shadow Defence Secretary and Conservative MP for South Suffolk. James, very good morning. This is a momentous day in many ways. Do you think that we pay enough attention to VJ Day compared to VE Day?
Well, Ian, thank you for having me on. It's an incredibly important day, and I think you make a really interesting point. I mean, first of all, you know, when we debated this in Parliament, so many people referred to the fact it's called the Forgotten War. Mm. And I think our job today is to make sure that is not the case, because there was huge sacrifice and, as you say, incredibly brutal fighting and circumstances, particularly, as you say, for the POWs. I mean, I can back up what you say. I had a great uncle who was on, who was in Burma, in the Burma campaign, who was on the infamous railway, who would never speak a word about it. And I've heard that from others as well. It was so traumatic, the experience. So I think it's particularly important that we honour those people who paid that terrible, the ultimate price, and honour their memory today. It's not a forgotten war.
How do we best do that? Because we can do this for one day. There's obviously the service at the National Arboretum today. But in the longer term, do we not need to improve the education on what happened in the Far East in those years?
It's a fair point. I think that there's two key things here today. We want to remember and honour those who served and, of course, those who remain with us today. But above all, you're right, we have to learn the lessons, and we have to keep learning those lessons, otherwise history will repeat itself. And so I think maybe it's in many ways a coincidence, but we have extraordinary events in the world with us. We have the meeting in Alaska, and we have to remember that you have to stand up and be prepared to fight for freedom and democracy and stand up to tyranny. That's the lesson of the Second World War. And I always worry that will be forgotten. That's why it's important that every year we wear the poppy, we honour Armistice Day, and we keep remembering that. And yes, I think education has a role to play in it.
I wonder if the history curriculum needs to be changed, because certainly when you and I were at school, we would have learned the causes of the Second World War, but it was all about the Nazis. There was never anything about what Japan and how the war was conducted. I wonder if that ought to be looked at.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I suppose, you know, this debate about VE Day and VJ Day, I mean, certainly, you know, it was closer to home in Europe, and also the sense of relief that the threat to the homeland had gone, right? I think that must have been the case at the time. But ultimately, you know, both are so important. There are lessons from both fronts that are so key. And after all, it was the only front in which nuclear weapons were used. So I think it is incredibly important historically. We have to explain to people, with every new generation, we have to explain why, unfortunately, we do have to invest in our armed forces. And until there is no threat from them, we have to, for example, possess nuclear weapons because other countries possess them and might fire them at us. You know, these sorts of things that perhaps you and I take for granted, those arguments, but as you say, they will be lost on subsequent generations if we don't remind people why we have armed forces and why we have to stand up for ourselves. Otherwise, you end up with the situation we had 80 years ago.
Let's look forward to what's happening in Alaska today. What are your hopes, what are your fears of what might emerge from this summit between Trump and Putin?
My hope is that this is a significant step forward in moving to a genuine, lasting peace. And by that, it means, first of all, a meaningful ceasefire where proper negotiations can happen and negotiations where Ukraine is front and centre, and that, therefore, we don't have an outcome, which I guess if you say, what is my fear, an outcome where, in some way, Russia is seen in any way to gain from what it did. Because I take a pretty straightforward view of this. Russia was the aggressor, an unprovoked invasion of a free, sovereign democracy, and it cannot be seen in any way to profit from that.
The fact is, though, that Britain, the European Union, Ukraine are not being represented at this summit. It seems a bit odd that Putin and Trump can get together and cook up something between them without any reference to either President Zelensky or the European allies.
Well, look, I sincerely hope that what comes from today is that pressure is applied to Putin. President Trump has said if he doesn't get a good outcome, he's threatened sanctions. We've seen those tariffs that will be coming on India, for example, for buying Russian oil. Hopefully more of that if we don't get a satisfactory outcome. And as I understand, there will be further steps in this process, which will then involve President Zelensky and European nations and of course, ourselves, the UK.
John Healey, the Defence Secretary, earlier on this programme called Nigel Farage a Putin apologist. Was he right to do so?
Well, having seen what Nigel Farage said previously, which I think he was very clear in saying that NATO had provoked the war. That's something I totally disagree with. And in fact, I called out Nigel Farage when, if you recall, some months ago, he came out with this strange statement that somehow Zelensky should set an election timetable, ignoring the fact that even we in the UK during the Second World War didn't hold elections because we were under martial law, and that it's impossible to do that when there's a war on. So he has come out with some pretty strange views. I have to say something, you know, I've reflected on. I've been in the chamber on almost every occasion. There's been a statement about Ukraine, a debate about defence. We never hear from Reform. It's strange, their approach to defence. So look, I hope that changes, and perhaps Nigel Farage is now using a different tone as he's more in the mainstream, shall we say. But I fundamentally disagree with him. Disagree with his analysis that in any way NATO provoked this. This was provoked by Russia. It was an illegal invasion of a dictatorship against democracy.
You say Reform's approach to defence is odd. But the Conservatives were in power for 14 years. You essentially ran down our defences at a time when Putin was ramping up his defence expenditure. Should you not feel deeply ashamed of that?
No, not at all. I feel very proud, actually. Now, if you talk about defence expenditure, under successive governments since 1985, defence spending has been falling because of the belief that we're in a more peaceful era. And that's entirely rational, although we always at least spent the NATO target. And I think that's very important to stress. But if you talk about our role, when Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022, it was the UK who'd, even before the invasion started, supplied weapons which helped Ukraine stay in the fight. If Ukraine had fallen early, if Kyiv had been conquered and the rest of Ukraine, we could have had a nightmare scenario with the Russian armed forces on the cusp of NATO. We as a country played a massive role in that, way above what other countries did at the time. And so actually, no, I'm proud of that. Of course, if you talk about the level of defence spending, now that we have greater threats, very obviously a greater threat scenario against what we thought had happened at the end of the Cold War. Yes, we once again need to increase defence spending. We increased it significantly when Boris Johnson was Prime Minister, and we hope it will continue to increase under this government.
Just very briefly, I don't know if you saw the poster that the Conservatives put out on Twitter yesterday with the headline, Asylum Seeker, Here's Your List of Perks, then a picture of a boat in the Channel, and then 12 or 15 different so-called perks that asylum seekers get. Should the Conservative Party not be deeply ashamed of whipping up anti-asylum seeker feeling with a poster like this?
Well, I don't think I've seen that specific poster you're talking about, but look, I think that...
You'd remember if you had.
Right. Well, I go with your view, Ian, and I take what you say. I'll see if I can search it up. I think the point is, what we're trying to do is to call the government to account, because we do feel this is such an important issue where they have failed. Now, yes, when we were in government, we had the small votes issue, and we couldn't bring forward our Rwanda plan because of the opposition it faced. And I do feel very strongly that given that the only way to stop this is a deterrent like a Rwanda scheme, the fact that the Prime Minister opposed that, did everything possible to defeat it, and has come into office promising to smash the gangs, he now has to be held to account, and that's our priority as a party.
James, thank you very much. That's James Cartledge, Shadow Defence Secretary and Conservative MP for South Suffolk. Coming up after the news, I want to take your calls on VJ Day, and we'll find out why spotted dick might become extinct. But first, at 9 o'clock, it's time for the news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, President Trump and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin are preparing to meet in Alaska this evening. The US leader has warned there will have to be some give and take to secure a ceasefire in Ukraine. European allies say Kyiv must be involved in any decisions about its future. Sir Mark Lyle-Grant is a former British ambassador to the UN.
From what we're now hearing from the White House, where they're playing down expectations from this particular summit and foreshadowing a future summit in which President Zelensky would also be present. So I think that makes the Europeans a little bit more hopeful that President Trump will not be outplayed, out-negotiated.
The Defence Secretary, John Healey, has told LBC that he believes Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist. He says Reform's voice is conspicuously absent in any discussion on Ukraine.
look at what he said about Russia, look at what he said about Putin in the past, look what he said in the middle of the general election campaign. At this point, where maximum pressure needs to be put on Ukraine, on Putin to support Ukraine in negotiations.
The Reform deputy leader, Richard Tice, says he is furious and completely rejects the allegation. Sir Keir Starmer says Ukraine is fighting for the same values as the Allies in the Second World War. Events are taking place to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, including a national two-minute silence at midday. The King has honoured the service and sacrifice of the soldiers who died in Japan. A 16-year-old boy is being questioned on suspicion of murder after a 13-year-old girl died in Huddersfield. Police were called to a flat in the town on Monday night. The suspect was also arrested on suspicion of rape relating to a separate incident. The High Court is expected to hear a council's attempt to close an asylum hotel in Essex. Epping District Council, which has applied for an injunction, says the area has seen an unprecedented level of protest and disruption. TikTok influencers are being recruited to help tackle the NHS bill for botched private surgery. They will take part in a government campaign to highlight the risks of medical tourism. Ministers say it'll help people make informed choices before undergoing procedures like hair transplants or so-called turkey teeth. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 10 at 91.87. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 16. LBC weather, dry and sunny in the south. Cloudy at further north with some showers in northern Scotland. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
This is Go.Compare FM reporting from Savvy Street, where mysterious moustaches are appearing on residents' faces. So, your tash, where did it come from?
I was sorting out my car insurance at Go.Compare and it appeared out of nowhere.
Madam, your moustache is magnificent.
I packed a great deal on home insurance and this Savvy Tash grew on me.
And Resident Cat, your whiskers have gone from meh to marvellous. How? Could have explained your pet insurance deal better myself. Britain, get in on the tash action. Be savvy. Feel the deal at
Go.Compare.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 3 minutes past nine on LBC. Several of you are asking why Nick Ferrari isn't here today. Nick is a machine. He takes less time off, I think, than any other LBC presenter. So when he gets married, I think we can all grant him a few days off for a honeymoon, don't you? So that's where he is. And I hope he's having a lovely time. Now, in this hour, it's going to be a varied hour this hour, because we are going to concentrate on VJ Day in a moment, and we're going to be taking your calls. Maybe if you are of a certain age, maybe you have memories of that day, August the 15th, 1945, or maybe you've been told about it. Maybe your father, grandfather, served in the Far East during the war. We'd love to hear your memories of your conversations with your father or grandfather about that. 0345 6060 973. But also, Princess Anne turns 75 today. We'll be talking about her contribution to public life. And also, now, those of you who, like me, are a bit partial to a bit of Spotted Dick or Jam Roly Poly, that's why I'm 17 stone 10, you're going to be horrified because people are predicting the end of the British pudding. Can you believe it? Well, 80 years ago today, Japan surrendered to Allied forces, bringing an end to the Second World War. It was just days after Nagasaki and Hiroshima. Two Japanese cities had atomic bombs dropped on them by the US. Well, LBC's Helen Hodinott has been looking back at that day.
Japan has today surrendered. The last of our enemies is laid low.
On the 15th of August, 1945, Prime Minister Clement Attlee announced the end to 6 years of war in a radio broadcast.
The Premier gave out the terrific news at midnight. Comparatively few people heard it. Some even left for work in the morning before radio or papers had put them wide.
That day, celebrations broke out across the country. Nazi Germany had surrendered just over 3 months earlier, ending the war in Europe.
Today is Victory in Europe Day. But let us not forget for a moment the toils and efforts that lie ahead.
fighting was still raging in Asia and the Pacific, and the Allies then turned their full attention to defeating Japan. An estimated 71,000 soldiers from Britain and Commonwealth countries died fighting Japan, including more than 12,000 prisoners of war who died in Japanese captivity.
Think of this time especially of the prisoners in Japanese hands.
Then in August 1945, the United States used the most powerful weapon the world had ever seen, the atomic bomb. Hitting the Japanese city of Hiroshima, followed 3 days later by a second on the city of Nagasaki. Tens of thousands of people were killed immediately, and many more died later from injuries and radiation caused by the explosions. US President Henry Truman told them there would be more to come.
If they do not now accept our terms, they may expect a rain of ruin from the air, the like of which has never been seen on this earth.
Washington's warning was heeded, and 6 days later, Japan surrendered.
Terminating the period of hostilities of World War II.
Helen Hodder not reporting there. Well, later on this morning, there'll be a service at the National Arboretum. Luke Shanahan is there, LBC's reporter. He's at the National Memorial. Luke, it's going to be quite an emotional morning, I imagine.
It is, Ian, and not least for the 33 veterans and the three surviving prisoners of war who will be joining us here at the beautiful National Memorial Arboretum. Acres of grass and trees dotted with countless memorials, but it's just one memorial we're concerned with above all others today, the Armed Forces Memorial, at the base of which the 80th VJ Day will be marked. And King Charles will be one of the 1,500 or so people here to do that, and we've had a message from him this morning.
On this day of profound remembrance, I speak to you in that same spirit of commemoration and celebration as we honour anew all those whose service and sacrifice saw the forces of liberty prevail.
Defence Secretary John Healey has also been paying tribute to VJ veterans, speaking earlier on your show, Ian.
The biggest honour for me in 1 year in this job so far to be alongside 30 VJ veterans who were teenagers, lads, when they left to fight, now over 100 years old, with some extraordinary stories. And this may be one of those final anniversaries in which we can hear their stories from them.
Things will be getting started here at the Naval Review area, which is opening at 10 a.m. There'll be live music starting at 10:45 a.m. and then a live broadcast of the service beginning at around 11:30. That's expected to conclude by 1 p.m. We're also expecting to hear from the 33 veterans of the war in Asia here today, and also from three surviving prisoners of war taken captive by Japan ahead of a 2-minute national silence, which will begin at 12, followed by a flypast by the Red Arrows and historic aircraft from the Battle of Britain Memorial flight, including a Spitfire, a Lancaster bomber. And from 9 tonight, hundreds of buildings and landmarks across the UK and the world will be lit up to mark VJ80, including Buckingham Palace, 10 Downing Street, Houses of Parliament, Tower of London, but also abroad. There'll be the Kranji War Memorial in Singapore, and then the final one, the White Cliffs of Dover, all to mark the sacrifice of those who fought and died for us to live our lives and live free today.
Luke, thank you very much. That's Luke Shanahan there, LBC's reporter at the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire. Steve says it's not just grandfathers who served. My great aunt was an army nursing officer. I have at home a Japanese officer's sword that she took from an injured POW in her care in 1944 on the Burmese front. Some of her unit's nurses had been killed soon before by Japanese forces. That's exactly the kind of anecdote I'm looking for in the rest of this hour, either on WhatsApp, text, or preferably on the phones, 0345 6060 973. I'm joined by Dr. Tessa Dunlop, author of Lest We Forget, War and Peace in 100 British Monuments, who also hosts the LBC podcast Where Politics Meets History, alongside some oik called Ian Dale. Tessa, very good morning. What does today, as a historian, what does today mean to you?
It's interesting. Clement Attlee, who of course was the Prime Minister at the time, it had been all change at number 10 between VE Day and VJ Day. He said, this is now the time for the world to choose between cooperation and destruction. And what's interesting is how, in many respects, much of the world has made that decision towards cooperation. And we've seen that cooperation come unstitched very painfully on the eastern side of Europe recently. And I think in some ways that speaks to the power of living testimony, how long this extraordinary peace held. The memory, and again, the King alluded to this in his speech this morning, the pain, the appalling nature of war, and how actually once it starts slipping from living memory, you forget. And fascinatingly, the impact of the Pacific War, we had a sort of bigger bonanza for VE Day because this was really the end. It was the end of the sirens. It was the end of the bombing and the blitz. In fact, there was quite a lot of cartoons saying, what are we going to do now? There's no all clear to look forward to. VJ Day, the Pacific War for Britain hugely implicated tens of thousands of our own soldiers and Commonwealth soldiers dead, many prisoners of war. We didn't know if they were alive or dead, even at the time of VJ Day. But it was still a more distant affair. And I was looking at testimony of the actual celebrations because the King and Queen rolled out. It was actually also the opening of Parliament. But it was, and many newspapers spoke to this, a less impressive, a bit more of an anticlimax, to be honest. Now, that absolutely wasn't the case, Ian, on the other side of the Atlantic. One of my original Bletchley girls who joined me for Lest We Forget and gave me her sort of testimony as to how we should remember war, now since departed, sadly, the wonderful Betty Webb, she was working in the Pentagon and she said it was extraordinary. She said, suddenly America erupted. We want Harry! We want Harry! They all cried. And she said it was as if stakes fell from the sky and they sat on their horns in a way that only Americans can. And that was her outstanding memory. And then her return to Britain, where rationing was still continuing. Mm. She said it was a very drab affair.
And it did for 9 years after that, didn't it? I think rationing didn't finish until 1954. What lessons can we draw from it, though, to learn today? Because, look, it's that trite old phrase, if we don't learn the lessons from history, we're condemned to repeat them. And I think at the moment, a lot of people in this world think we are repeating the mistakes of the past.
Well, we are, of course. The difference is the two primary, I mean, more than two, but the primary antagonists now all have nuclear weapons at their disposal. The difference was America was able to inflict this appalling level of destruction on Japan, knowing the traffic would be one way. And I think to an extent, that has held people back. But in other ways, it's also made us, particularly in the West, I think, fearful about really confronting our enemies, the likes of which, of course, is Vladimir Putin. And the other way, and you can look back at what Clement Attlee said, the other way, of course, is cooperation. People might think it's hugely unsavoury, the idea of giving Putin the honour, because it is an honour, of meeting the American president later today. But if the alternative is continued destruction, then we must pursue, must we not, with all rigour and good faith, cooperation, so long as it's backed up with serious security promises.
Now, I've had a cheeky text here, Tessa, from Chris in Bracken, who says, I'm holding my breath listening to Tessa and you and desperately hoping the doctor doesn't skip into podcast mode whilst you frantically operate the dump button. I mean, how disrespectful can people get, Tessa?
I know. So what did somebody once call me on the podcast? Feral, Ian.
Yes, entirely
I've had to look
accurate.
That up in the dictionary. Now, what does feral actually mean?
Well, it's not a good word. There's a new episode out this morning, which you recorded with another man, Albie Amankona, yesterday, because I'm nominally still on holiday, believe it or not. So what can people expect if they download the most recent episode of Where Politics Meets History?
It's kind to ask. We had a really deep dig into the implications of this Putin and Trump meeting, and also looked behind the symbolism of Alaska, which of course is fascinating geographically in terms of the chosen location. It was the only part, interestingly, of America, a few islands that were invaded by the Japanese. The only part of American soil that was invaded during World War II was up in Alaska. Of course, the Russians, well, I think, very much still consider it theirs.
And Hawaii.
Yes, well, that was invaded, but it wasn't occupied. These were occupied in Alaska, and I think that very much changed the tenor of how America felt towards World War II. Like I say, a massive celebration, VJ Day, right across America. It'd be interesting to see how their commemorations pan out today in relation to ours. I've got to say, Ian, we are really good at remembering some wars, not all wars, but we are particularly good at remembering World War II and spectacular event last night at the Memorial Gates. And today that National Memorial Arboretum really is the most beautiful space in the middle of England.
Tessa, thank you very much indeed. That's Dr. Tessa Dunlop there. If you want to listen, if you've never listened to Where Politics Meets History before, give it a go. You can download it from the LBC app, Global Player, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're going to take calls in the next 15 minutes. No guests, just your calls over the next quarter of an hour. So plenty of space, 0345 6060 973. What does VJ Day mean to you and your family? It's 16 minutes past nine. And the news headlines with Thomas Watts.
The Prime Minister says Ukraine is fighting for the same values as the Allies in the Second World War on the 80th anniversary of VJ Day. Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are preparing for their summit in Alaska, and the Defence Secretary has told Ian that he believes Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist, a claim rejected by Reform UK. LBC weather, dry and sunny in the south, cloudier further north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 6 at Godstone to the Clackett Lane services, and that's because a car's broken down and one lane is closed. Very busy in Tottenham on the A10 going southbound to Monument Way, and that's all down to an accident. Also, the problems continue on the trains. London Overground's Lioness Line can now run between Euston and Watford Junction, but with severe delays. It's all after a signal failure. And also severe delays on the Bakerloo Line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone. And then there are minor delays on the rest of the line. Also on the underground, there are minor delays on the central line between Leytonstone and Hainault and also up to Epping. And that was after an investigation from earlier.
This is LBC.
It's official. We're the littlest on price, which have crowned us the cheapest supermarket this July, beating seven other supermarkets, including their loyalty prices. For the littlest prices, you know you can always rely on us. Now that's big on quality and always little on price.
Findings based on independent price comparison of 76 items by which every day in July 2025.
This is LBC.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mine? Ta. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
You're driving down the back roads of Tuscany. The sun's setting, the wind's in your hair. You're playing your favourite tunes. No, not that one. Much better. Could life be any sweeter? Of course it can. With the money you've saved by comparing car hire prices through Kayak, you've got more to spend on some fresh, creamy gelato. Mmm, we'll take due scoops, per favore. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news. Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Meet Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
20 past nine on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you until 10. Never let it be said that we don't give you any variety on this show, because between now and 10, we're going to be talking about VJ Day. But there'll be a couple of, well, one awkward gear change in the next 40 minutes, because we're going to talk about the possible end of the British pudding. I'm not sure how you define the British pudding. Jam roly-poly, spotted dick, treacle, tart. Does that count as a pudding? Apple, I can't see apple crumble ever being ended. Apple and blackberry crumble, that's my personal favourite. So that's coming up in a little bit. That's a tease to keep you listening. That's what we do in Radioland. But Let's go back to talking about VJ Day because it's the 80th anniversary today. Paul says, as for VJ Day, I'm generally surprised the government hasn't made a fuss about this before, as it's the proper end of World War II. It seems fitting to talk about it this year as the world is in such peril. I doubt very much that Richard Tice nearly crashed his car. That's a complete overreaction on his part. I think it's a little bit of hyperbole there. Let's go to Esri in Barry in South Wales. Good morning.
Good morning, Ian. How are you this morning?
I'm terribly well. What would you like to tell me?
What I'd like to say is that I think that VJ Day is one of the is absolutely very important, that we need to be taught about everything to do with what happened in the Pacific and in Asia, because it was part and parcel of the war. I think that in people's minds, especially here in Europe, when we often celebrate VE Day, we often remember what happened on our continent. We tend to forget that the war had another theatre, and that was Southeast Asia. And I think that more so than ever, we need to remind people of the terrors of unbridled nationalism and ideological dead ends. And this is, and especially in today's modern climate, where you see the MAGA movement in the United States, and you're seeing the rise of the far right here in Europe, in equal measure, even in this country, we're seeing it. I won't mention political parties or names because I think it's disrespectful to the memories of those who died in making the ultimate sacrifice in World War II. But I really do think that we need to have this education. I think there needs to be more done at schools to blatantly tell people exactly what happened. Because I don't know about you, Ian, but I remember as a child in my schooling being visited by World War II veterans, yeah, who told us the stories. And they told us the stories in a brutal and uncensored way. And it gave, and it fundamentally built a political calorie in me that went, well, this can never, ever be allowed to happen. And certainly, you know, moving forward, we need to make sure this history isn't repeated itself.
And I don't know how old you are, Esri, but certainly when I was a child in the 1960s, early 70s, the shadow of the Second World War really hung over the country. And my dad was a teenager growing up in the Second World War. He never served. He was 10 when it broke out. But his entire childhood was dominated by the war. And if he watched something on television, it would be about the war. If he read a book, it would be about the war. Now, yeah, moving on to 2025, we don't have those links anymore, do we?
I mean, no, we don't.
Our grandparents might well have some memories of what their relations did in the war, but it's fading into history now in a way that even 5 or 10 years ago, it didn't seem to.
And this is one of the things that really annoys me about what's happening right now. When you have elements within our own peoples, especially our far right, and we know that they are on the rise, using World War II imagery and the spirit of World War II as a justification for their actions. Like, it's like when I see certain members of certain political parties wearing the poppy, I get extremely annoyed because how dare you?
Why shouldn't they? I mean, the poppy is owned by the whole country. It doesn't just belong to a certain class of people.
Because when we made the declaration of war against not just Hitler, but we also made a declaration of war against Japan and others, we also made a universal declaration against fascism, something that was never rescinded, by the way, at the end of World War II. And I just personally think that we have forgotten the lessons, and we are allowing people to misrepresent the facts in today's modern era, and it is something which we really do need to challenge.
Okay. Thank you very much. Rob says, my father was in Burma during World War II, a very brave man, mentioned in dispatches, but he never talked about his experiences. And sadly, these went to the grave with him. We should remember VJ Day in the same way as we do VE Day. Andy's in Chelmsford. Good morning, Andy.
Morning, Ian. How are you?
Good, thank you. What would you like to say?
Yeah, my grandfather died as a prisoner of war on the Burma Railway. And he was
buried in Chung Kai Cemetery out there. My nan never knew exactly where he'd been buried. She knew it was Thailand. But neither her or my dad had ever got out there to sort of visit him or anything like that. So I retired about 8 years ago and decided it would be a thing I would do. So I went out there, found the cemetery in the... found the cemetery and found his plot there. The cemetery is absolutely beautiful. It's stunning. The World Graves Commission really do
get it. They really do, don't they? I mean, I've been to the Normandy cemeteries, and I mean, there isn't a blade of grass out of place, is there?
No, not at all. But one of the things, sort of did a bit of a tour out there. One of the places I went to was Hellfire Pass, which was where one of the places they were building the railway through. And they just, by hand, they just chiseled through the top of the mountain, basically. And I've never felt heat like it. Mm. It was pouring. I mean, I was just there as a tourist. It was just pouring off me. It was absolutely unbelievable.
Just describe the emotions that you felt on that visit.
It was strange. It was very peaceful. A sorrow, I think, just for the thousands and thousands of people that died there. One of the places they've got in, there's a place called Kanchanbari, which has got the largest war grave there. And one of the things they've got is a museum. And I went in there and there was sort of lots of sort of memorabilia, as you can imagine. But one of the things they had was a chart with the different nationalities and how many of the different nationalities had died in the sort of as part of this trying to build this railway. And there was sort of loads of English, loads of Australians and New Zealanders and Americans. But by far, the greatest death was the local people. So they probably topped all the rest, almost put into one. It was unbelievable. But while I was there, I got talking to the guy that ran it, and he was an Australian, and he explained why I was out there, and that my granddad had died on the railway, and this, that, and the other. And he took me into the office, and he had all the books, and he could look up everyone, and he could look up, and he said, "Oh yeah, your granddad was captured in Singapore on this day. He made, they sort of transported them on sort of through railways and forced marches like this way. This is sort of where he was working. This is where the camp was. This is what the camp looked like. This is the day that he allegedly sort of apparently died. This is what they said that he died of." I mean, it was absolutely mind blowing. It was a complete personal history that I just had no knowledge of.
Well, I'm so glad you had that experience, Andy, because it is important that we remember our forefathers, our forebears, if you like. I remember going to visit the graves in Molenbeek in Belgium at a Commonwealth War Graves Cemetery. My great-uncle Clifford died in battle 10 days before the end of the First World War, and my sisters and I took my father to visit this grave, and it was a really, really emotional day. Andy, thank you. Let's go to Alan in Enfield. Alan, hi.
Hi, good morning, Ian. Very nice to talk to you.
Hi.
So what I'd like to do is, on behalf of my late father in the RAF right through the war, and he passed away in 2008, but he was in part of the RAF that people don't talk about very much. And in all the discussions on VE Day, there doesn't seem to be any mention of the RAF and the fact that Coastal Command, which is one of the three main wings of what was the RAF, spent a lot of time, all their time, out in India and Burma, working behind enemy lines, bombing the Japanese, and we seem to have been completely forgotten. And I think it's important that we hear a bit more about them.
Well, and well done for mentioning them, because I think you're absolutely right. I won't say they're ignored, but they don't get the same profile as other parts of the armed forces.
Well, that's right. And let me tell you a little bit about him and what he did. He volunteered in 1939, and he went into the RAF. and ended up training in Ceylon. Then he went out to India and around the Middle East. But then the squadron he was in, with other squadrons from Coastal Command, ended up in India and spent the rest of the time. A lot of it was secret SOE work because they were flying over Japanese territory after the Japanese had invaded the area. And they were looking for landing sites for a counter-invasion. They also bombed a lot of the Japanese installations, and they had it rough as well. One of the flights, the lead plane, there were B-24 Liberators. One of the planes got shot down. It happened to have the squadron leader on the plane. They were captured by the Japanese, and then alongside the plane, they were all forced to kneel, and their heads were removed. And, you know, people forget about that side of it. Not everyone even managed to get to a prisoner of war camp. They were just executed on the spot.
Yeah, we talk a lot about war crimes in the current environment, but I think we can all agree that was a war crime. Alan, thank you very much indeed. Now, did you wake up this morning craving a bit of spotted dick? Because if you did, it's a bad day for you. We'll hear more about that in just a moment after the news at 9:32 with Thomas Watts.
The King says the end of the Second World War provides a vital lesson for our times. Event taking place this morning to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day with a national silence at midday. The Defence Secretary, John Healey, says the US-Russia summit later could be a first step towards serious negotiations for peace in Ukraine. Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin are preparing to meet in Alaska in about 12 hours' time. A row has broken out between Labour and Reform over claims Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist. Reform's deputy leader Richard Tice has told Ian that John Healey's claim is outrageous. LBC weather, dry and sunny in southern parts of the UK, cloudier further north, a high of 30 degrees.
This is LBC.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
It's official. We're the Lidlest on price. Which have crowned us the cheapest supermarket this July, beating seven other supermarkets, including their loyalty prices. For the Lidlest prices, you know you can always rely on us. Now that's big on quality and always Lidl on price.
Findings based on independent price comparison of 76 items by which every day in July 2025.
Make the O2 your playground this summer. Test your football skills at Toka Social. Take to the skies at iFly indoor skydiving. Or challenge your friends at Boom Battle Bar. Let the kids burn off energy at Oxygen Active Play. Perfect your game at Paddle Social Club. Or test your reflexes in the world of Activate. There's something for everyone at the O2. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavors from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Ugh, drizzly drive to the office. Ever wanted to just shove some bits in a bag? Hop on a plane and land somewhere magnifique? Well, with Kayak Explore, it's easier than ever. Whatever your budget, wherever you want to go, simply set the amount you want to spend and Kayak finds flights that fit. Easy breezy. Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Call 0345 6060 973.
9:34, Anastasia says, Ian, there is a difference between puddings and desserts. I can't stand this spotty dick. Spotted, not spotty. I do like rhubarb crumble. I love a bit of rhubarb crumble, I have to say. Now, you might think, what's he wittering on about? Nick Ferrari would never witter on about spotted dick. Well, you're probably right about that. But we are talking about it because because English Heritage has sounded the alarm that the good old British pudding is facing extinction. Research from the charity suggests two-thirds of households in England, Wales and Scotland make puddings only once a month or less, while a third never bake or boil or steam one. They warn that if nothing was done to stem the tide, the great British pudding will not exist in 50 years. Dr. Andrew Han, for it is he, a senior curator of history at English Heritage, said, "Sweet puddings are closely intertwined with British history, and it would be a huge shame for them to die out. For the purposes of this research, the charity defines puddings as cooked sweet courses that follow a main meal. So not just traditional puddings, typically made in mould or basins, but also dishes such as apple pies or crumbles." Dr. Han waxed lyrical about the sort of puddings his mother would make. She regularly produced a delicious pudding after the main course, things like steamed sponge pudding with coming out of a pudding basin with the syrup dribbling down the side. You get me going now. There was a whole repertoire of delicious puddings. People are not generally making these sorts of hot desserts, but turning to things like ice cream, yogurts or fruit. Perish the thought, eh? But I think there is a point here, because my mother was exactly the same. She would love doing a steamed pudding, a jam roly-poly, as I say, spotted dick, treacle tart, all these things, which I'm sure are very bad for you, but they were very, very enjoyable. So are they going to die out? Well, Tony Rod joins me now, chief patron of 15 Square Metres in Broadstairs in Kent and MasterChef finalist in 2015. Tony, very good morning to you. I mean, I think it's quite amusing that English Heritage are doing this, but do you share their worries?
I'm not sure I share it as a worry, but I think it's true. I think times have changed. And I think a lot of that stems from our lifestyles more than anything else. I think the reality is it takes a long time to make a steamed pudding or an apple pie or a crumble. And we're such busy people nowadays that we don't have time to make desserts like that. And we've also got other worries on our brains, such as the cost of the ingredients, the health implications of making them. And for those people who are living in small one-bedroom flats, having a kitchen entirely full of muffin tins and moulds and things
full
like that
what?
Just seems unrealistic.
Muffin tins?
Say again?
Did you say muffin tins?
Muffin tins, yeah, what muffin tins. What you make muffin.
Oh, muffin. Oh,
muffin. Oh, yeah, apologies.
Sorry.
So I think...
My brain was going in a different direction there.
But I think that we've moved away from those desserts for various reasons. And I think that some of them will be confined to the history books, absolutely. And others will be made, but just as special treats, Christmas time and things like that. But that's exactly what traditions are. They're set in a time period that works for that individual, and those traditions change and they come and go over time.
Spotted dick, where does that name come from?
I believe it's because of the raisins and sultanas that come inside it, but I'm not entirely sure the original origins, so to speak.
Well, apparently it dates from, I've looked it up on ChatGPT, it dates back to the 19th century, but it doesn't say where the name originates from. So if anybody can enlighten us on that, we'd love to hear from you, 84850, or do WhatsApp us as well. Tony, thank you very much indeed. That's Tony Rod there, chief patron of 15 Square Metres in Broadstairs in Kent. And just down the road, Alan is recommending that if you want some spotted dick, you should go to the Gate Clinic in Canterbury. Very good service, says Alan. Right, awkward gear change screech here. Let's go back to your calls on VJ Day. Carol is in Wolverhampton. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
Hello, what would you like to say?
I'd like to talk to you about my dad, really, Albert Ernest Green. He was in the Royal Artillery in 1941. On his way to Iran, and they got diverted to Singapore when Japan entered the war.
That's quite a big diversion, isn't it?
Yes. He was one of the ones that got diverted. He was 20 years old at the time. He had his 21st birthday aboard that ship. He was captured in Java on the 8th of March, 1942, and spent the next 3.5 years as a Far East prisoner of war.
Did he ever talk about that experience?
He told me little bits. He told me about battles. He was in battles in Sumatra and Java. He told me little bits. And he once told me about being aboard a ship and he had dysentery. For many years, I thought he was on a hospital ship. But I've spent several years researching my dad's history of World War II. And what he was really on was a hell ship. I don't know if you know about hell ships.
No, tell me.
They were retired ships that the Japanese had. It was a cargo ship, rusted, old, and ready for demolition. They forced 1,000 men into the holds of this ship, rat-infested, lice-infested, filthy, dirty ship. And they transported them from Java and onto mainland Japan. Many of them died aboard the ships. Dysentery, seasickness, confined. They weren't allowed on deck. They were confined in this for weeks on end, many dying, and having to lie in their own and each other's body waste for the whole of that time. My dad was fortunate enough to survive that when he didn't. He had nightmares about that for many years. I remember that as a child, him screaming in the night and being really distressed.
And I think when you think about what people went through, not in prisoner of war camps, they were bad enough, but what your description of that hell ship, and those of us who've ever been on a ship when it's been in sort of like force nine gales, which I have for one night, I mean, that was bad enough. But you think about being on one of those ships for days, weeks, possibly months on end. I mean, that would be the definition of hell, wouldn't it?
Yes, and during my dad's journey, they had a typhoon. And they had to batten down the hatches. They didn't let any air in into the ship because the seas were so rough. They just left them there dying, pulling the bodies out. And just he did once tell me about sharks following the ship. I didn't know at the time that he meant the hell ship. He said, and they were waiting for the bodies to be put overboard. That was the final end of many of the people who died aboard the ships.
And he would relive that in his, dreams, nightmares.
Yes. I can remember when Emperor Hirohito came to the UK and my father had surgery for cancer, bowel cancer. And it was in all the papers about Emperor Hirohito. My dad obviously knew he was here. 2 days after my dad's surgery, I got called into the consultant. And the consultant told me that they unfortunately had to take my father off morphine because he was having so severe flashbacks from that time. He was reliving it. And he was so distressed. He was, flaying out, shouting and screaming. And I think he assaulted one of the nurses, thinking he was in the camp. So I was told that, unfortunately, they had to take him off morphine, and they had to nurse him, but with male nurses, to calm him down. Yeah.
Well,
so he never.
Well, Carol, I was going to say thank you so much for telling us about his story. I think there'll be a lot of people say, well, that's kind of my dad or my granddad's story as well, because he would have flashbacks and relive a lot of the terrible things that he experienced in his dreams. Carol, thank you. Let's go to Constance in Woking. Constance, my darling. Now, people wonder why I say that, because you are my favourite caller on my show, and you are 100 years old, aren't you?
Yes, you're so kind, Ian. I can't follow this. That last story was horrific. I just needed to tell you that during the war, as you know, I was in the WAF, and at the time, 1945, I was serving up in Egypt. My mother was down in Mombasa, and she got seriously ill, and she had to be accompanied to Durban to have a big operation. And the RAF very kindly gave me compassionate leave to leave Cairo, go down to Mombasa, and go by ship, a troop ship, from Mombasa to Durban. And on that troop ship, of course, we weren't allowed to to mingle with the prisoners of war. It was carrying the first lot of prisoners, British prisoners, from the Japanese area, from the camps in Japan, back to the UK. And my mother and I had one of the, they allowed about four cabins for civilians who were in a similar position to we, to us. And we were allowed, not allowed to mingle with the prisoners, but we could look, we could see them on the deck below. And I can tell you, it's something I will never forget. I'll take to the grave with me. Those prisoners were exactly as they were depicted in pictures after the war. They were walking skeletons. Mm. But even worse was the look in their eyes. They didn't know. It was just terrible to see them just wandering around, not knowing where they were or anything. And it was just awful to see them. And I don't think anybody today can possibly realise what people went through those days.
We hear a lot about this phrase, the bravest of the brave. To me, they absolutely were. Because whatever anyone went through in the European theatre of war, and there was horrific things happened there, and it's invidious to compare battlefields and cruelty, but I don't think humanity has ever seen the kind of inhumanity to man that we saw in the Far East.
No, you're quite right. It was just, you can't believe it today because the Japanese are such a good nation now. They're just the opposite to what they were. And it's just so sad. And if I may, I would just like to end by reminding people, my husband was in the RAF. I didn't know him at the time. I met him afterwards. But he was in the RAF and he was flying over in Burma. One of your previous callers referred to the RAF over there. And in his memory, I'd like to say, well, thank you, because they did a lot of work and didn't really get much credit for it.
Elizabeth says, Constance has brought me to tears. Constance, whenever you ring in, your heart sings to me in some way that I can't really explain, but I'm so grateful to you. Thank you very much indeed for calling me this morning.
Thank you for listening, Ian.
That's what I'm here for, Constance. Thank you very much. Constance phoned into my show a couple of years ago, I think, and I think she was nearing her 100th birthday then. You'd never believe she was 100, would you, from how she sounds, but she is one of my favourite people. More calls coming up, plus Princess Anne turns 75 today. We'll appreciate the life of the hardest working royal. But first, at 9:48, it's time for the news with Thomas Watts.
President Trump and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin are preparing to meet in Alaska this evening. The Defence Secretary John Healey has told LBC he believes Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist, a claim rejected by Reform. And events are taking place to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day, including a national two-minute silence at midday. LBC weather, southern parts of the UK dry and sunny again, cloudier further north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There are delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from Junction 6 at Godston to the Clackett Lane services, and that's where a car's broken down and one lane is closed. Very busy on the M4 westbound, Junction 8-9 at Maidenhead, and that's all down to an accident. Long delays continue on the A10 in Tottenham going southbound to Monument Way. It's all down to an accident. And in Catford, the South Circular Road's very busy westbound to the Catford Gyratory, and that's because a bus has broken down. On the trains, London Overground's Lioness Line still running with severe delays between Euston and Watford Junction. Also severe delays on the Bakerloo line between Queen's Park and Harrow and Wealdstone, but the delays on the Central line have now cleared.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
As Donald Trump prepares to meet Vladimir Putin in Alaska, there's a growing sense that Volodymyr Zelensky may already have lost. Has he?
James O'Brien on LBC.
Wake up, it's new bedroom time because there's more to rent than kitchens. And with our new bedroom packages starting at just £499, everyone can have the style they've been dreaming of. Designed and delivered by experts you trust within 7 days. Visit your local rent showroom or go online to find out more and join the great renovation.
This is LBC. Listen on the move with the all-new LBC app. Download it for free from the App Store.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Do it for your wife, who told you to pick up bread, but instead you picked up Fred, your grandson, again. And now your daughter is calling because he missed football. That's the fourth time this month. You can wave his future career goodbye. If you don't do it for you, do it for your wife and little Freddy.
Book a free hearing test today at bootshearingcare.com and save up to £300 with our free technology upgrade. Boots, with you for life. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Outlet shopping at the O2. Get up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Sunglass Hut, the cosmetics company store, Le Creuset, and more. Plus, why not make a day of it with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, interactive football, and more. There's so much to do at the O2 this summer. Find us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search Outlet Shopping at the O2 to start planning your visit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast with Ian Dale. Call 0345 60 60973. This is LBC.
9.52 on LBC. James O'Brien coming up at 10. But first, let's hear from Francesco in Loughborough. Now, Francesco, you want to talk about puddings?
Sure, Ian. Hi, everybody. I'm managing director for Casper's Desserts, which is a chain of dessert restaurants in the UK. And I'd like to comfort everybody to say that traditional desserts are not going anywhere.
Thank God
everybody
for that.
Everybody loves
Thank
them.
God for
everybody
you, Francesco.
I'm glad to hear you. Everybody loves them. And as much as innovation is very, very important because one can get bored of the same flavors all the time. But we found that there have been a lot of creation with the old tradition back into the new generation. So we find that Gen Z and Gen Alpha, actually, they like to reinvent traditional desserts. We even have to create in marketing a new term, which is called nostalgia, where we reinterpret the old traditional dessert and we present it in a slightly different way. But there's so much comfort in going back to the apple crumbles and spotted dick and sticky toffee pudding. They're not going to go anywhere. In the past, we tried to cut down on the apple crumble in our menu. And we had the highest number of complaints.
Really?
Because not only new generation, but obviously the parents and grandparents, they are quite affectionate to this comfort food. So, you know, I think it's good news for everybody. We can try and innovate and create new desserts, but we like to have some tradition on our plates. I cannot vouch for what happens at home, but in our desserts, when we sell, you know, lots of pancakes. We can cover the M1 from London to Nottingham with a pancake we sell in a year. But, you know, the apple crumble, sticky toffee pudding, Jammy Dodgers. We had to create an ice cream based on Jammy Dodger last winter. And people loved it.
Well, that's fantastic. So Casper's Desserts, go and find your local branch. Francesco, thank you very much indeed. Now, Princess Anne turns 75 today. Throughout her life in the public eye, the Princess Royal has built a reputation for being hardworking and no-nonsense. LBC's Henry Riley has been looking back at her life and her many public appearances.
I hope you've all had a chance to see this cake, because it really is stunning. The instructions are that you will eat it if I cut it, because otherwise it's just legalised vandalism.
Born 2 years after her brother King Charles in 1950, Princess Anne is best known for her frank, plain-speaking public demeanour.
About being an aunt.
It's my business, thank you very much.
A princess of firsts, the first member of the royal family to appear as a contestant on a TV quiz show, appearing on A Question of Sport in 1987.
It's Windjammer.
The horse is Windjammer, but the rider.
You didn't say you wanted both.
The first royal to make an official visit to the USSR, Vietnam, also the first to have an HGV licence, and the first to compete in the Olympic Games in Montreal in 1974 with the British equestrian team.
I'm delighted to get round in one piece, and having not made a total nitwit of myself, but naturally one would like to take a gold medal home as well.
How would you rate the actual chances of getting a gold medal?
I think there are several teams that are in very good chances, and luck will play a considerable part, as normal.
Last year, she managed 474 official engagements, the highest among the firm. Often cutting cakes and ribbons, she's involved with more than 300 charities, military regiments and organisations in the UK, including her beloved British Olympic Association.
As a country, we share a passion for sport, and we also share a desire to welcome you to London in 2012.
While seen as a private individual, the Princess Royal has found herself in the public spotlight, notably in 1974.
Shots have been fired at Princess Anne and Captain Phillips. They escaped, but four people were hit, one seriously.
Her marriage to Olympian Mark Phillips broke down.
Oh, God, why are you here?
What's happened?
Portrayed more recently in the TV show The Crown.
Yes, how is Mark?
That's it, exactly like that. How is Mark? Mark's fine. I'm fine. The children are fine.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. Only there has been talk.
The same year she divorced Captain Phillips, she married her now partner, Vice Admiral Sir Timothy Lawrence. The retired naval officer, though, found himself in hospital last year, visiting the Princess Royal, who had concussion.
The Princess Royal is in hospital in Bristol under observation after an accident at her Gatcombe Park estate in Gloucestershire. Buckingham Palace says she suffered minor injuries and concussion.
She's been fined £500 after a dog attack, £400 for doing 93 miles an hour in a 70 zone, and during the COVID years, the Princess Royal even introduced the late Queen Elizabeth II to Zoom.
Morning, at Windsor.
Good morning. I'm very glad to have been able to join you.
Can you see everybody? You should have six people on your screen.
Yes, well, I can see four anyway.
Princess Anne spent her last working day before her birthday visiting a Liverpool stable, a Cheshire oat miller and an animal feed factory. She has the nickname of the hardest working royal.
I'd just like to make the point that we're very fortunate that His Majesty has allowed us to use Buckingham Palace for this event, and I need to say that because in other aspects I probably wouldn't. It does help.
And that was LBC's Henry Riley reporting. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the brand new LBC app, where you can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. Well, I'm back on Monday at 7 p.m. Coming up at 1 on LBC, it's Sheila Fogarty. But first, here's James O'Brien.
Thank you, Ian. Have a lovely weekend. The time is approaching 10 o'clock. A Chinese economist once asked the former Times editor Simon Jenkins to explain British universities. Why do you take your young, he said, at their most creative age, lock them in a monastery for 3 years and make them drunk? We may turn our attention later to the question of why people still want to go to university. For the record, I really think that they should. But we begin, inevitably, with imminent events in Alaska. Reading much of the coverage today, and following much of the coverage today, because some of it is, of course, broadcast rather than written, that there is a sense in quite a lot of opening comments and paragraphs that Vladimir Putin has already won a significant victory. Is that true?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, President Trump and his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin are preparing to meet in Alaska this evening. The US leader has warned there will have to be some give and take to secure a ceasefire in the war in Ukraine. Ukraine itself won't be represented, but Mr. Trump has suggested a second round of talks could involve Volodymyr Zelensky. The Defense Secretary John Healey's told LBC that Kyiv must be involved in deciding its future.
What I think you've seen from the European leaders and the discussions with the Americans in the run-up to today is a recognition that for negotiations to succeed, a ceasefire is required. And for negotiations to succeed, Putin must be serious about peace.
Mr. Healey has told LBC that he believes Nigel Farage is a Putin apologist. He says reform's voice is conspicuously absent in any discussion on Ukraine.
Look at what he said about Russia. Look at what he said about Putin in the past. Look what he said in the middle of the general election campaign.
But the reform deputy leader, Richard Tice, says he's furious about the remarks.
I completely reject the Secretary of State's outrageous allegations. Just last year, I went to Ukraine. I donated a five-figure sum. I took medical supplies over there.
The King has praised the courage and sacrifice of soldiers who fought in the Pacific and the Far East in the Second World War. He is due to attend a VJ Day service at the National Memorial Arboretum in Staffordshire. 80 years since Japan surrendered to the Allied forces. A two-minute silence will be observed at midday. The High Court is to hear a council's attempt to stop a hotel in Essex being used to house asylum seekers. Epping Forest District Council's applied for a temporary injunction. It says the area has experienced unprecedented levels of protest and disruption. Two EasyJet planes have clipped wings while taxiing at Manchester Airport. The airlines apologised for any delays caused by this morning's incident. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 10 at 91.87. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.16. LBC weather, dry and sunny in southern parts of the UK, cloudier further north with some showers in northern Scotland. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Summer's best bits. Relaxing on beaches. Catching up with friends and family. And here's another summer highlight. Right now with SEAT Summer Savings, you get £500 off the SEAT range on top of existing offers. Just order and take delivery by the 30th of September. SEAT Summer Savings. Now on.
T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. Excludes SEAT Ibiza. New stock vehicles only subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on the road price.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10. Let me just run something by you as an illustration, perhaps, of a rarely noted problem. What do you think the current casualty count for Russia alone is as a consequence of the Ukraine war? Just have a swing at it. And obviously, if you know the answer to this, then you are the exception that perhaps proves the rule that I'm about to observe. I was asked that question earlier today, and my answer was 250,000. I got a little bit confused because I thought it meant deaths, but the question was actually casualties. But either way, what would you say the total casualties, including deaths, was? It's about 1 million. This is a study that came out in June from the US-based Center for Strategic and International Studies. It's very hard to get accurate figures, particularly from the Russian side. It's much easier from the Ukrainian side, where it is estimated that between 60 and 100,000 people have been killed and 400,000 casualties have been recorded. So And it is about a quarter of a million deaths for the Russian military. So you've got, give or take, 1.5 million human casualties in this war. And that was from the end of June, so it will be a little higher now. And it's on VJ Day, on the 80th anniversary of VJ Day. It's easy, isn't it, to, I forget the exact quote, but the idea that there's a point at which a number becomes too big to properly process. Do you know what I mean? It's much easier to conceive of figures that we can visualise. You know, if you imagine a classroom full of people, a studio full of people, a building, an office full of people, you can get your head around that. It's why journalists often reach for quite strange metrics. Double-decker buses are always used, aren't they, to convey space or distance, or it's four Wembleys, or we use football stadia, because sometimes a number is too big to actually visualise, to actually conceive of. It's always true in war, I think, because casualties very quickly become statistics. But that's 1 million humans on the Russian side alone, 1.5 million humans, all of whom, of course, had two parents, many of whom will have had children, siblings, wives, husbands, partners, 1.5 million human beings. And today, the men and women from both sides of that war will watch two of the most hideous human beings ever to achieve high national office meet to discuss their future, meet ostensibly to discuss the idea that that they are dedicated to a cessation of hostilities, that there has already been too much death. Something that I don't think Vladimir Putin thinks even in his darkest moments. That is, to me, and I don't know that I would have come in this way round if it wasn't for the very moving commemorations of VJ Day, which we'll mark with 2 minutes silence, by the way, at 12 noon today, that I think it was Stalin. Neil thinks it was Stalin as well. One death is a tragedy. 1,000 deaths is a statistic. What is 300,000 plus deaths? I don't know. So as you read into some of the scene setting for today's summit in Alaska, two things occur to me. The first is how we have failed, all of us, properly to recalibrate our language, our commentary, our reporting, to recognise the fact that you have two objectively hideous human beings in the in the room, two objectively hideous human beings, whether in their personal lives or their political lives. You have moral depravity on a scale that is close to unique, I think. It wouldn't be unheard of to have one person sitting on the side of a negotiation table, in Yalta, for example, to go back to Joseph Stalin, but to have both sides of a negotiation essentially represented by moral bankruptcy is absolutely extraordinary. And we haven't risen to the challenge, have we, as a not just as a profession, as a media, but as a population, as a public? We haven't risen to the challenge of reporting all of this stuff through the lenses of the personal and public depravity of both of these men. Donald Trump's lies are now so commonplace and so huge that many of us have perhaps given up trying properly to track them, whereas Vladimir Putin is probably the richest man in the world as a consequence of everything that he has stolen from the Russian people, dedicated, as dictators throughout the ages are, to staying in power in order to avoid cosmic justice or karmic justice or simple criminal justice. And that is the fate not just of the Ukrainian people, but also of the next phalanx of Russians that will be marched to their death by Vladimir Putin. And the second thing you take away from today's scene setting is a very real sense, and perhaps something we haven't properly clocked on this programme, that Putin has already won. I mean, there are a number of reasons for this, but he is meeting the American president on American soil.